contract around Australia. Here's Inside Motorsport.
For another week, welcome to Inside Motorsport. To all the fathers out there, happy Father's Day. Mind of which we'll hear this about a month late because it'll be on the internet. No, in actual fact, it's on the Auto Channel. Inside Motorsport at the Auto Channel is on Mondays at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, US. So what's that, Peter?
You've confused me, Craig. But that's pretty easy to do.
Peter Norton and Colin Ford on the other side of the desk as we get set for the Queensland 500, the speculation on Craig Lowndes' future, and a whole bunch more coming up on the show. Luke Yeldon, we have a chat to Craig Lowndes himself, but we don't talk contracts because we got told that we'd get hung up on if we did, and considering that 2 weeks ago we got hung up on by Neil, it's probably not a good habit to get into being hung up on. But Dean Canto, the winner of the V8 Lights Championship, has a chat, and also Luke Yeldon, who won the Formula Ford Championship. Congratulations to James Courtney, who we spoke to last weekend. He was quite confident he was going to wrap up the Formula Ford Championship. That is what he, in fact, did last weekend in England. So an interesting show, NASCAR and a whole bunch more, including German touring car and American Le Mans news. So only an hour to get through it tonight. But next weekend, of course, the Queensland 500. Peter Norton, you're going to go up there, and we look like having 2 hours of coverage from the Queensland 500, and because I'm not going to be here, we'll guarantee that it'll be better than our last two-hour special.
Yes, we won't pass any comment about the last two-hour special, Craig. But yes, next weekend I'll be up in Queensland to check out the Queensland 500, so I'm hoping to bring you some interviews and tidbits live from Queensland.
And of course, just goes to show, so we have to actually send Craig out of the country to get ourselves another two-hour program.
Yes, what does that say? Yeah.
Well, I don't know about you fellas, but last weekend there was a Grand Prix on. Quite an interesting result, and you have to ask yourself what is going on at Ferrari. But before we talk about that in depth, we should hear what Jonathan Legard from the BBC World Service had to say about the event.
It could be the defining moment of the championship. It's sure to become the stuff of legend. 3 laps remaining, Schumacher on top, Hakkinen chasing to atone for spinning out of the lead on a drying track. Up from the famous Eau Rouge corner, 190 miles an hour. Hakkinen dived right, Schumacher went left. Zonta, the back marker, was trapped in between. Hakkinen made the corner first, and Schumacher knew he was beaten. The McLaren straight line speed had done him again, as in Hungary a fortnight ago. The difference is that Hakkinen is now 6 points clear with 4 races left. It's his third victory in 6 weeks. David Coulthard's fourth place drops him 13 points down. Jenson Button's dreams of a first podium went west in a tangle with Jarno Trulli soon after the safety car left the track at the start. But as the sun reappeared over Spa, fifth seemed decent enough.
Yes, and an interesting race, I think, if you all saw it. Ferrari should have, when Coulthard spun out, should have just wrapped that up, and that should have been all that was written about it.
Yes, it should have been over, and I think the further insult to injury was what happened to Rubens Barrichello, who I understand ran out of fuel right at the end of the race.
Yeah.
What are these guys doing?
Actually, it's very interesting the fact that initially Ferrari called it a fuel pressure problem. If there's no fuel, there's no pressure.
But in this next piece, we've got the press conference, the official Formula One press conference. Thanks very much to our good friends at the BBC, because we're not paying $6,000 to get it. And I should add in that there was talk in that about the Williams losing some fuel pressure, and in fact Ralph Schumacher found himself stalling off one of the corners and just feathered the throttle, or pumped the throttle as you do in an electronic fuel injector car, to find nothing really normally happens. He said it found, take it off again, and away she went. No one wants to talk about it?
No. Let's hear from him.
All right, now we can't hear from him straight away. We'll go to Jenson Button, who, of course, a lot of the talk in Europe has been over his startling performance, up to third, although he did spin out and spin truly out in the process, and that did cost him, quite a bit of track position and time.
To start with, Frank and Patrick, I'm very grateful that to them for bringing me into Formula 1, because otherwise I wouldn't have had the chance. And they've done a great job of giving me a good car, and also BMW for giving me a good engine. But I'm leaving the end of this year. I'm going to Benetton. But I think it's a good move. I think Renault's going to be a good team to work with. Also, Briatore is doing a great job at the moment, and Renault coming back in. So I'm going to look forward to the next 2 years, and then again in 2003, I'll be back at Williams.
You want that place back. I mean, that is your target. No matter how well you do at Benetton, you want to be back here.
I think in 2003, Williams and BMW will be very, very high up, and I think it'll be the perfect year to come back.
What did Frank Williams say to you then when he broke the news to you? Thank you, but almost no thanks.
Well, it was over a couple of weeks, really. It was a very tough couple of weeks. But we sort of knew anyway at the start of the year that I wouldn't be racing for Williams.
But if you'd done well, I mean, if you'd qualified, you know, as you did, as you've done here, then surely you would have had a chance, wouldn't you? Or have you always been an uphill battle?
It has been, really, because I'm always learning. I'm learning the car, learning the circuits, and it would have been impossible for me to put it third at the start of the year. We weren't quick enough. Basically, we just weren't quick enough. So that's one of the reasons. To suddenly being third on the grid, we're just getting more experience, learning the circuits. I know this circuit for one. So I don't think it was any chance for me being with Williams, I don't think.
And what about Benetton then? What are you hoping for then? Can you win races, for example? Or is it again just a question of gathering experience and points as you go?
It's difficult to say because really this year is the important one at the moment. With Williams' next four races, I don't really want to think about next year too much. And again, I don't know what the car's going to be like or the engine. I haven't driven it yet, so it's just from what people say. So we won't know until next year or the end of the year when I start testing for them.
We're now almost into the last quarter of your first Formula 1 year. Has it been very much what you thought, or has the media got to you, or are you the racing too difficult, or has everything been as you expected, or has it been different in any way?
It's pretty much been what I expected it to be. It's just a lot busier than I thought it would be.
Things like this.
Yeah. I thought it wouldn't be so busy, but there's so much testing and first day today, but it's great.
You don't feel exhausted, you still feel happy, refreshed.
Especially after a good result like this, you don't ever. Until you go home, and then you do get drained, and all the adrenaline's gone and everything, and then you have a couple of days resting. I'm getting used to the schedule. It's quite tough, but it's good. I'm loving it. It's always what I wanted to do, F1, so it's great.
And the recognition, you can handle all that as you go around, wherever you go, you know,
I think
at home and so on.
I think after yesterday's performance, it might be a bit more busy, but I'm okay with that. It's cool. I've had a couple of people come up to me in restaurants and things. And say hello and ask for autographs, but they're always really friendly and don't stay for too long, so it's not a problem, it's good.
And your private life becoming sort of national property at times, how do you handle that? How have you enjoyed that?
Well, really, I wasn't very experienced in that part at the start of the year, but now private life is completely separate, and no one ever knows anything about it. Well, yes, anyway.
Have you stopped reading the papers, for example?
I don't get that much time to read papers, really. When I'm at home, I don't sit around. Really, I do obviously go to the gym and things like that, but I go out with my friends and family, so I don't normally have any time to read anything.
And what about the other drivers? How are you getting on with all them? And for example, on the drivers' parade, as the lorry goes round in the build-up to the race today, I noticed you talk to a lot of other people, I mean, which means you're very sociable.
Yeah, we all get on pretty well. On the parade and on the briefing and everything, so yeah, they're cool.
Schumacher said anything to you? Well done, keep it going.
Yeah, he said well done. Ralph did, and also Mika when we were in there, and truly they said, yeah, great job, keep it up, and good luck in the future. So it's great. They're all like one big battle sometimes.
Few arguments occasionally.
Yeah, of course there is, but that's F1 and that's motorsport.
And are you still on course, just a final thought, are you still on course to be world champion, or the youngest Formula 1 champion, which is one of your dreams when you first came
in? Yeah, well, one of my dreams, my dream is really to be world champion. If I'm the youngest, great. But we'll see.
I don't think Jenson Button would have been as warmly receptive by Yana Trulli after the race as he was during qualifying, fellas.
Yeah, I think that's right. Yeah, sort of after a little coming together as they tried to share the same piece of track, I suppose that Yana would feel well and truly put out because, oh dear, terrible pun there. But, he was in a good situation and it basically put him out. But you've got to consider that Jenson Button, he's not doing too bad for his first season, and also to finish, qualify third and finish fifth in a place like Spa-Francorchamps is doing pretty good.
Yes, it wasn't too bad, but I do get some sort of sense that his two-year loan to Benetton, is it something of a sin bin?
I don't know if it's a sin bin, it's the fact that everybody's contracted and it's a case of, well, where's the next best place to send him? And he's going to get himself some good experience, definitely with a top-line team, which is Benetton.
And, you know, Benetton can't be too shabby because Australia's own Mike Webber is going there as well. As we, as everybody now knows, he's sort of off doing his bit of testing for them. So really, it's a case of where's the next best place to send somebody and let them develop over a couple of years.
Yep, fair enough. And now, there's been various reports during the week about Mark Webber having the testing contract at Benetton next year. What really is the situation there?
Well, yeah, does anybody really know? I'd say what you'll find is that until he's done this test session, which is coming up in a couple of weeks' time.
2 weeks' time, exactly.
Yep. That nothing will be really signed, sealed and delivered until he does that. And then if he does the right thing there, then obviously what he does for 2001, both in terms of Formula 3000, which you'll probably find another drive there to keep him busy during the bulk of the season, but also in terms of what he does in terms of testing for Benetton, if that gets confirmed at the time.
Mm. Well, back to the Belgium Formula 1 Grand Prix. Nico Hakkinen was the winner, and in a very exciting finish to the race, he was quite excited at the press conference.
Isn't it?
Well, it was incredible. It was incredible. It was very difficult, unusual situations, including my spin was not obviously planned. But the curbs here in Spa are very, very difficult, very slippery. And when they catch you, it's nothing what you can really do. I was lucky to stay on track and able to continue, and I was able to start changing Michael. But it was fabulous race to drive and really enjoyable, and the car was better and better all the time.
As a consequence of the spin that you just mentioned, you made up for it with an absolutely spectacular and heart-stopping overtaken manoeuvre. Can you talk us through that?
Yes, it was quite a different one. Normally that kind of situation is unusual to overtake somebody on the straight line when the pack marker is between us. And I knew that way following Michael, you know, it's no point to try to follow him and then try to overtake him and end the straight, because obviously he's not going to give me a room. Is correct?
Yeah. I make
so. So I took the plan B and I went completely inside and overtook the back marker, and at the same time overtook the Michael, and I could tow also from the back marker, so it gave me extra speed, and it was great overtaking maneuver, and I lost it. I'm not sure if the Michael did.
Thank you, Mika. Michael Schumacher, we saw you going on to the right hand side for the climb to Lake Com, obviously cooling your tyres down. Was that the reason why Mika actually caught you up?
No, it was not the reason. It actually helped me a little bit to go away from him in the first part of the race, as I was building up my lead, honestly. But later on, that was not enough, because he was flying towards me, being so much faster that nothing would have helped.
We were talking about the overtaking manoeuvre with Mika. How was it from your viewpoint?
Obviously, I was quite lucky or happy to see this back marker in front of me, because I knew I was a lot slower on the straight line speed from what the team told me. So being in slipstream of the guy in front of me, I thought it will not be enough for him to catch me. And then obviously once there's somebody on the same road, then normally there's only two cars that fit next to each other. But Mika did really an outstanding maneuver to pass on the inside there, because that was unexpected for my side. But honestly, if he wouldn't have catched me there, I think he would have catched me a lap or two later, because he was too fast down there, and you allowed to move once the line, and he would have taken me on the outside, to my view. I tried my best. It was not enough today, but we got 6 points, and we keep the championship alive, even though we made it a little bit more difficult today, but we will keep going for it. I mean, it's not the end now.
Thank you very much, Michael. Ralf Schumacher, the ever-improving Williams, your third today. Do you think as the season goes on, you might be able to get a win?
Well, I think certainly we thought that we were close to dying rain conditions. That would have been the only chance for us to be relatively close to the top, I thought. But we saw today that Mika was outstandingly quick and compared to anybody else, basically. So that was not possible. We're working on it, obviously. I think we are definitely the third team in the World Championship now. We try to stay there and get some more good podium or points finishes.
How was your car today in these mixed conditions? Because you didn't have much time in the warm-up, obviously.
We were pretty much prepared for the rain, so we had a sort of medium setup, which I must say was pretty good. Except the two in front of us and then some other just before they pitted, we were relatively quick, so I could stay ahead of Kuta. I had a little bit of a problem towards the end, so I thought the race was over. It was 4 laps or 5 laps to go. I had a throttle problem, so I went into a turn and nothing happened anymore. It was like fuel out, but it was throttled. Mika came back alive and luckily to the end.
Thank you very much, Ralph. Mika, back to you. Next, we're down to Monza and Ferrari territory. Do you think you can silence Mr. Fosi and keep your championship lead?
We will have a testing next week, first of all, in Monza, which is important, particularly because the circuit has been modified now. So it's going to be a little bit learning in the first day to understand that corner and to find the best out of it. And then when we have finished those test days, I hope in those days we're able to find the best possible setup and performance of the car to coming Monza Grand Prix. And I'm seeing all the possibilities to be there quick and challenging all in places and hopefully winning to Monza. But again, it's better to enjoy now and to concentrate to the next Grand Prix.
Yes, and well, Mika Häkkinen has to think that his luck's going to run out eventually, because Ferrari surely can't stand on their proverbial at Imola.
They better not, otherwise I think they'd be hung, drawn and quartered by the Tifosi, because that, you know, is sort of almost be sacrilege for them, as they say.
Yeah, it would indeed. And I don't know, Peter, it just seems like Ferrari can find more ways to lose a championship than Collingwood premierships.
That goes without saying, doesn't it?
Alright, Colin? You're free?
I'm free here.
Yeah. Formula Holden was a interesting championship right throughout the year, but it looks like the rookie might be able to come up and knock off the defending champion. In the end, it was Simon Wills who picked up the championship, and Brenton Ramsey joins us on the line now, because it did go right down to the wire.
Yeah, thanks, Craig. The championship was an excellent battle this year, and really it turned out to be a battle between, as you say, the rookie Christian Murchison and the defending champion Simon Wills. And coming into the final round, there was still the option for Christian to win, and that's what he did in the first race, with Simon sort of cruising to a third position. But third was enough then for Simon to take the championship, so the gloves came off for the second race, and there was no holds barred in that one.
And in the end, Wills getting the second championship on the trot, and now must be looking at what his options are. Winning this one two in a row sort of indicates that he needs to move on for a fresh challenge.
Yeah, I think Simon has got a few options open to him for next year. In the short term, he's looking obviously to a race in the Enduros with the Stone Brothers at Queensland and the Bathurst. And then I think, he'll be able to assess after those performances what his next move might be. But a very tight racing year for him in Formula Holden this year, and a lot tougher at the front than it was in the year before. So definitely a good way to hone his skills, that's for sure.
Mm. Now, of course, in the case of Christian Murchison, he's actually the young up-and-comer who's really got everybody sitting up and taking notice. He's done a former 3000 test. Now he's been named with Larry Perkins' team. Obviously, the guy for everybody to keep an eye on for the future.
Oh, Christian has got just the world at his feet at the moment, really, when you look at it. I mean, it's such an impressive performance in Formula Holden. As you mentioned, that Formula 3000 test, he's a young guy. He's got a great attitude, and he's obviously fast on the track. Yeah, I mean, he is a star of the future, and you see him out on the track in Formula Holden, and let's hope he goes well in the V8s and lines up something maybe in the open wheelers for next year, maybe overseas. There are plenty of options when you look at where our other champions have gone, like Dixon and Bright, who are now excelling in Indy Lights.
And of course, Dixon making the move up one rung might open the door for him to make a New Zealander move into a New Zealand seat there.
Yeah, there's a few things going on there with the Indy Lights, and just as an aside to that, the Formula Holden contingent actually making the trek over to Laguna Seca this Thursday to meet with the Indy Lights people and meet with PacWest and meet with Doricott Racing and just further these links that we're building up now, so that Formula Holden drivers really have got somewhere to look to go the next level. And even I see talk of Matthew Halliday doing a test at the end of the year with Indy Lights as well. So there's opportunities left, right and centre for these young guys.
Mm. Yeah, of course, the thing is, it's interesting to see that just the number of the guys who've gone from Formula Holden getting drives in the V8 Lights or in some of the leading V8 teams, as well as going and looking at things like Indy Lights. So it is a formula that is certainly making its mark in terms of for a place for young guys to be seen.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, I think what it shows is if you can drive a Formula Holden quickly and you're able to take it up to the leaders in Formula Holden, it really means you can map those skills to a V8 supercar or to any other sort of open wheeler that you might turn your hand to. And that's what I think the V8 teams recognise when they're looking for new young drivers. And it's what the other categories recognise to overseas now.
Mm-hmm. Now, Brenton, of course, the Formula Holden season is not at an end, even though the championship is closed, because we have that fabulous Tasman Cup series about to kick off once again. And news that young Stuart McCall from Formula Ford ranks could be moving up into the Kmart, Reynard.
Yeah, well, there's a few things going on at the moment, a few interesting things going on with Formula Holden with the championship over here in Australia. As you see, a number of drivers coming through and testing now. Stuart McCall, as you mentioned, is going to test with the Kmart team. I think he tested on Friday. And we've also got a guy coming over from the States called Emerson Newton-John, who's actually, the nephew of Olivia. And he's testing with Murphy Motorsport, so there's a few tests going on now to try and firm up deals for the Tasman Cup, and the Tasman Cup kicks off on November 24th to 26th in the North Island, and then moves up to Pukekohe on December the 3rd for the actual New Zealand Grand Prix. So a great series that's going to unfold in November and December in New Zealand this year. Just more Formula Holden action, really.
Mm. Now, of course, we've mentioned all the young guns, but we believe that after the season was finished at Malawa, it was the team owners, team fathers, etc., who were the ones who were let loose at Malawa on the Monday.
Yeah, well, that was definitely that was definitely quite a fun day. I'm not sure what quite to call it, whether we call it the geriatrics or whether we call it Formula Holden seniors or something like that. But on Monday, older boys got out and they had a bit of a run with some of the Formula Holdens, and making the track was my father, Malcolm Ramsey. He's the principal of Piranha Racing, and Arthur Abrahams, the principal of NRC Racing, Campbell Breed, who's Dale Breed's father, and also getting out there was one of the photographers from Formula Holden, Dirk Kleinfest. So there was quite a few guys out there having a bit of a run, and Simon Wills' father, of course, as well, and the other Barana. So the old boys all got out there and had a good run, and not without incident too. I've got to say that early money was on Kieran Wills having the first spin, but it ended up being Malcolm who speared off on lap two, so the money was not well placed there.
And who did get up to win it? I think someone like an Abrahams would be pretty much favourite for line honours.
Yes, Arthur, I think, was quite clearly the quickest on the day, having most recently driven Formula Holden. And then I think between the others, it was probably Malcolm, Kieran, and then Campbell. So they were definitely fairly competitive about it all, and they're all trying to psych each other out, which was good fun to see. But I think they had a great day at the end of it all, and also just gave some of them an appreciation of what it's like to drive the Formula Holden again around a track like Malawa. So, yeah, it was a great day.
See where their money's going, I think you could say. But, Brenton, we look forward to catching up with you right throughout the Tasman series, because that one is just going from strength to strength.
Yeah, well, we're really looking forward to heading over to New Zealand again. We ran there last year in the South Island, and the series was very well received. And this year it's moving to the North Island, and I think it's only going to get bigger and better there. Obviously, up in Auckland, the support there for Formula Holden is good. They've been building up the lead up into the Grand Prix with all of our races coming over via TV1. And yeah, the vibe there is excellent. Just speaking only a few days ago to Kerry Cooper, who's the promoter over there in for Motor Race New Zealand, and you know, everything is really coming together well, and we're looking forward to going over with about 18 cars.
It sounds like it is going to be a fantastic Tasman Cup series. We look forward to catching up with you right throughout I think October, November is the date to sit down for.
Yeah, we're kicking off actually in November at Mansfield, and then right at the end of November and into the 1st to 3rd of December will be the New Zealand Grand Prix, and we'll definitely keep you posted on all of that.
All right, thanks very much once again to Brenton Ramsey. Right throughout this year, he's given us some great coverage of the Formula Holden column.
Yes, and last weekend, of course, we previewed the last round of the British Touring Car Championship, which was at Brands Hatch on the Indy Circuit, and once again it was a situation where things were not as people thought they'd been, and as it was, once again, it was the Independent Cup driver, Matt Neal, in the Team Dynamics Nissan Primera, who had a race win in the sprint race, and his win came about the fact that he qualified third. He was following Rickard Rydell and Tom Christensen, who fell foul of one of the Class B cars. They spun out on some oil. As it was, Matt Neal was able to hold on and take the win in the sprint race. So, as you said, it was good to win, but unfortunately this time around there wasn't that man Gow with a cheque for £250,000. And in the longer distance race, that was won by Alain Menu in a Ford Mondeo. So he's looking very, very good for the championship this year to win it for Ford.
We have to wonder why, Peter Norton, are the Blue Oval badges so good everywhere but Australia?
Just give it time. Just you wait. I'll get back on top.
The Formula Ford Championship was a very interesting one this season, leading it off with Liam Ferrier in front for a long time, but the eventual winner joins us on the line now. And Luke Yeldon, congratulations on a fantastic charge. It was a pretty tough year.
Yeah, thanks, Craig. It was a tough year. We sort of kept our cool there towards the end there and sort of got across the post.
For yourself, how many years have you been in the Formula Ford ranks?
Well, this is my first season. I'm Rookie of the Year. It's the first national season, but I've sort of been in Formula Ford on and off now for about 4 years, just in sort of state competition and just trying to raise the money. And sort of this year was the first season we've got enough money to do the whole series.
And well, it looked like you put the years of the national series into the state series into good use, coming out with quite a strong championship result.
Yeah, definitely. So all those years are good experience. Last year in particular, we didn't actually race at all. We looked after Greg Ritter's championship assault and prepared that car, and that sort of gave me a lot of confidence with the knowledge of the car, and also I think helped my driving for this year.
Now, a lot of drivers in the past have won this championship and then been forced out on their own because they're not eligible to run the following year. Do the rules for you still apply?
Yeah, it still applies, but I really think once you've won it anyway, it's best to move on. You can't be stuck in the same category forever, so onwards and upwards we go. I think hopefully into supercars next year if we can.
That's a pretty big jump, and what about any other races between then and next year? Are you looking to go to the Formula Ford Championship in England?
Yeah, definitely looking to go to the festival. Still to finalise the deal, but it's looking pretty good. It doesn't really clash with anything over here, which was the main worry. But I think if we're getting a good team over there, hopefully Harry Woods, I think we should do well over there.
I know James Courtney wrapped up his championship last week, and on the show last week he was asking about how many of the Australian drivers. Are many of the fellas you were racing with talking about going to the festival?
Not that I know of, Craig. I think Stuart McColl was thinking about going over there. I'm not sure if he can raise money or not, but other than that, I think it might be just me at the moment.
This is a pretty hard question, but this year the Formula Fords weren't the main supporter for the supercars all season, but you did run with some supercar races and some V8 light races. Did you find much of a difference in atmosphere between those two events?
Oh, definitely. I think we did two rounds with the V8 light, and definitely the atmosphere's not as good there. The crowd is pretty much non-existent at the lights round, so yeah, it is a big difference. But each race is equally important. We just got to press on.
Now, sponsors are a major part of anyone's racing career, and I'm sure you've had a bit of help this year.
Oh, definitely. Clubs actually work for Dougal McDougal Motorsport and Hello Quench. They supported me greatly this year, and without them I couldn't have really done it. So, thanks to them.
All right. And next season, do you have a preference, Ford or Holden?
Well, I've actually signed a deal with Castrol Perkins to do the Queensland 500 and Bathurst this year, so I guess I'm a Holden man.
With Perkins Racing,
yeah, definitely.
And of course, they did a lot of work with the young guns a few years ago.
Yeah, I think it's an excellent team for me to start in. Larry came to me, and I think we did a fairly good job in testing, and hopefully we continue to do a good job for the next few races.
Have you had any VR supercar experience?
No, only the two sort of test drives we had with Perkins. I actually had to fly back from Mel to test on Monday with Christian Murchison, and that went pretty well. So the next time in a V8 Supercar will be next weekend, actually, at Queensland 500.
Mm. And you'll be running with Christian?
Yeah, we'll be Christian. I think it should be a pretty good team.
Yeah.
I know Christian pretty well, so yeah, it should be all right.
All right, and the two Rookie of the Years in the open wheel divisions are getting their opportunity in the fin tops.
Yeah, I think it's great to have actually Larry supporting us young guys, and I think a lot of other touring car teams should do the same. I think there's a lot of talent out there, and I think it's just good for the supercar team to give us a go.
Mm. All right, well, all the best with next weekend, and congratulations once again. The 31st year of Formula Ford Racing, the championship going to yourself.
Thank you very much, Craig.
The V8 lights also concluded at Malalaan last weekend. Dean Canto was the eventual victor of the championship and goes on to partner Canberra's own Neil Bates next weekend at the Queensland 500. But first of all, congratulations, Dean.
Yeah, thanks very much. Definitely was an exciting finish to the championship. The top four guys in the championship were all had a chance of taking it out, so there wasn't going to be any doors left open, and it certainly provided some close racing.
I tell you what, Besnard came home with a wet sail. Lucky he wasn't in the first two rounds. It could have really given you some trouble.
Oh, definitely. I mean, it's probably good in my mind that we have Dave there to sort of compare ourselves where we'd be against the level one team. You there?
Yes, certainly. Yep. And,
I'm pretty happy with how we were going against David. So, definitely the team and the car were performing fairly well. And, it's probably right that Dave was at the beginning of the year. Probably could have ruined our chances. So, we're just happy to win the championship the first year, and the team did a great job all year long.
Mm. Now, for yourself, you had a great run a few years ago in a long-distance race with, of course, Murray, I think it was Murray Coote, back at Sandown.
With Alfie, Sandown in the Maserati, yes.
That's right.
No, definitely, that was a great car to drive. It was very exciting, sort of very hard to control, and a lot of horsepower with the turbo and all the stuff. It sort of came on all of a sudden, so it was very exciting to drive. But last year, just took a stab at Super Tours, just mainly to get a bit more experience in a different car. And I mean, it didn't really hurt me. It wasn't too many cars there, but still, just another notch on the belt. Just gained some laps at other tracks and just learned another car.
And what about this opportunity next weekend to jump into a Ford Tickford car? It must be a big chance there for you and also Neil Bates to get plenty of experience.
Oh, definitely. Neil's a very consistent driver and very fast. We had a test day after Malala the other day, and he's a very, very smooth driver on the car and very consistent. So I think we've got a good chance of finishing in the top 10. Last year it was him and Mr. Brabham. They were leading the race, and unfortunately had a bit of a missed a pit stop in there, so that sort of put them back a bit. But definitely, he said the cars are very consistent at that track, so they were just able to consistently do very good times, and basically that was the reason why they were leading last year.
I think having run the Supercar last year would have at least given you some pit stop experience.
Oh, definitely. The pit stops in every race were a challenge, like coming into the pit. Some tracks had small pit lanes and other ones had big ones, but definitely just stopping on the marks is the main thing, getting in line with the jacks and with the rattle gun guys and all that sort of stuff sort of helps for the future and in the endurance races.
This going to be your first visit to the Queensland Raceway?
No, I raced there last year with Wayne Wakefield actually, but we had a few problems with the car and we still finished, but we were a few laps down, but mainly it was just an experience game for me.
And the V8 lights as a concept, obviously winning the championship, you think they're a great idea because it is a good thing to have on your resume, but how did it all come together this year, and do you think it has a future?
I hope so. Basically, a good friend of Terry Steer, he used to report for Auto Action, and he's got the sponsor online, VNC Software, for us. He manages all the car, and he knows a lot of people, so basically without him I probably couldn't have done it. He's been great, you know, just I think he just wants to go out and run his own team and give a young guy a go.
And for yourself, what goals have you got now for next year? Obviously, winning the Privateers Championship or the V8 Lights Championship is sort of an indication that you need to get the funding to go up to the professional levels.
Oh, I would like to get the funding. Unfortunately, we haven't got anything on site at the moment. We're looking at buying an AU for next year in the Lights Championship because I don't think we'll be able to afford to run with a level one guy. So hopefully next year, if we don't get any money for next year to run the level one, I can sort of do another good job in the Lights next year, and hopefully the year after that I can sign up a driver to level one team, hopefully.
Mm. The V8 Lights Championship is going to undergo a few changes. What would you like to see changed about it?
Probably, instead of three races, probably two would be a little bit better, and just make them a little bit longer, and you know, just get everyone settled down a little bit better, because three races are sort of, you know, a little bit stop and go. Probably the other thing, or maybe a pit stop, I'm not sure, you know, it's a bit hard at some of the tracks with little pits, and some of the guys aren't set up for it, so that's another thing, but it seems to work with the level one guys, it seems to work without a pit stop, so I'll basically just make it a little bit more exciting somehow. I'm not sure how they could do it.
Well, congratulations on last weekend and your success in picking up the first ever V8 Lights Championship. And no matter what they do to the name or anything to it, you're still going to be remembered as the inaugural winner.
Yeah, for sure. Hopefully I can take it out in another championship some other year.
Yeah. Thanks very much, Dean Canto, for joining us here on Inside Motorsport.
Thank you.
Joining us on the line is Mark McGuinness from the Australian Torch Relay, and of course it makes its way to Canberra this week on Wednesday night. In fact, it's the 6th of September at Addison Park, but before that it spent a day at the spiritual home of Australian motorsport, which of course is Bathurst. Mark, thanks for joining us.
Oh, it's a great pleasure. A very exciting day at Bathurst on Saturday. The three race drivers, one pass, Peter Brock, the legend, and Craig Lowndes and Mark Scaife, all ran with the Torch, one after the other. And of course, Lowndes got to drive it in the race car around Bathurst a couple of times.
And of course, this relay has also given plenty of opportunity to a number of other drivers.
Yes, look, I saw Todd Kelly in Perth, Greg Murphy in Western Victoria, Larry Perkins, and there's a couple, Garth Tander and Russell Engle ran in Tasmania. So there's been quite a few of the Holden drivers that had the opportunity to run, and it's been a great experience for those guys. Being associated with local community servants and heroes, race car heroes are a different breed.
Mm. Now, of course, the Great Aussie Barbecue is a part of the celebrations, and it'll be taking place this Wednesday here in Canberra at Addison Park, which is in the Woden area, corner of Launceston Street and Yamba Drive.
Well, the Great Aussie Barbecue is going to be in three locations in Canberra, because the Torch arrives on Tuesday night at Capitol Hill. It zooms around Canberra and for lunch on at Balcommon. And Wednesday night, it's at Yamba Drive. And there's a couple of the Golden Holden Utes there, and local community service groups are dishing up sausage sandwiches and steaks in some cases, and making some money for their own interests. And of course, you've got an opportunity of winning a car, filling out a form and winning a car. A couple of Golden acclaims will be won by people from around Australia that attended the Great Aussie Barbecue, or the dealers, And that'll be drawn on the 15th of September, the opening day of the Olympic Games.
Yes, it is a very exciting moment for all the Australians that are participating in the Australian Torch Relay. And as Craig Lowndes joins us on the line, Mark, Holden has had quite a long involvement with the Olympic Games, going back to the Melbourne Games of 56.
Yeah, Holden was the official vehicle supplier in 1956, as they are for Sydney, and they supported the Torch Relay in 1956. Of course, it's a different exercise in those days, and they ran 24 hours a day, and you had to be able to run the your mile relay leg in under 6 minutes. I'm sure Craig could probably do that. He's a pretty fit young fella. I'm not sure about Brocky or Scafie, but they were able to do their legs at a rather leisurely pace yesterday, and there were thousands of fans out there to see them at Murray Corner.
Well, Craig Lowndes, who did enjoy his participation in the Torch Relay, not only did you get to run with it, but you also got to take it on a lap inside the Holden.
I did. It was quite amazing. I think it was the first time they're telling me that it's been in a race car or a car at all, so very exciting to do the two laps of Bathurst and Mount Panorama, and really, I guess I've been telling people motor racing is not an Olympic sport, but to be a part of an Olympic event with a torch relay and the way it's been orchestrated, it's been a fantastic opportunity to be a part of it.
It also was coinciding quite recently with the new Eco Commodore that was released by Holden on, I think, Thursday.
Yes, they're obviously looking for the future and sort of trying to, I guess, produce a car with zero emissions, and Holden's involvement in the whole Olympics has been fantastic. It's over 4,000 cars they're supplying, and really, I guess, the support they've given us as a race team as well has enabled us to be part of this whole atmosphere of being part of the Olympics. And I guess, as you mentioned, the last one was 56, and I guess when it comes back to Australia again, I'm going to be a lot older, so it's great to be part of it as it is today.
Well, Mark, getting back to the Torch Relay, it comes into Canberra on Tuesday, is it?
It arrives on Tuesday PM, and the celebration site is at Capitol Hill, and the Great Aussie Barbecue will be there. Then it travels around the suburbs of Canberra and has the luncheon celebration is at Belconnen, and the evening celebration is at in Yamba Drive near Government House before it pushes off the next day for Cooma and Threadbow.
All right, so still making its way in this 100 days of the Torch Relay. It has been an amazing opportunity for everyone to get involved.
It is. It's a very unifying, very, very unifying experience. It's a rare experience that very few of us have had an opportunity to experience in our lifetime, and I think probably more than 90% of all Australians will see the torch go past home or participate in the celebration site. And it's a great feeling, as Craig will as Craig has indicated.
Well, Mark, pleasure to catch up with you, and we wish all the best for the 13 days remaining in the Torch Relay.
Thanks very much, Craig.
Well, Craig Lowndes, it is a special opportunity to be involved in something like that.
It is, and it's just a great feeling. The amount of support we had, I think we had roughly over 5,000 people lining the streets of Bathurst, and it's quite amazing to have that amount of people to support something that's at anything real, I guess, and really the amount of people that have come out of Bathurst and really lined the streets. I was lucky enough to receive the lit torch off Peter Brock, do the two laps at Mount Panorama, then get out of the car, run down to Mark Scaife, lighting his torch and letting him on his way. It was quite amazing. People were joking. They're sort of saying I was like a track and field the way I was doing everything, but it is a great opportunity to be part of it. As I said, it's going to be a lifetime memories, and really to see that that final day where it lights the big one, it's going to be a great feeling for everyone that's been part of this whole relay.
Are you going to have an opportunity to go to any of the Olympic events?
Unfortunately not. I would love to, and talking to Peter Brock, Peter's got a bigger involvement. He is now on his way, I believe, to be based in the village itself at Homebush, and really to help out the Australian athletes wherever he can. I think Peter is a fantastic motivator, and I think that's the area he'll be looking at It's also great to have a motor racing icon around you at this time of the year. It's you know, these athletes spend 4 years of their life training for this one day, and really, if you have a cold or anything go wrong on that one day, unfortunately, the 4 years go down the gurgle. So, I'm really looking forward to sitting down and watching every Australian win.
Yes, it's going to be an exciting 2 weeks, that's for sure. You've got an exciting week coming up, because the first of the long distance races proper going on at the Queensland 500 next weekend, and obviously, both yourself and Mark are looking forward to sort of erasing the memory of 99.
Yes, we would. We had a great race there in the sprint round format early this year. The cars were performing exceptionally well. I guess the only thing we have to remember is the Falcons now have, I guess as we know it now, a common undertray. It's our Commodore undertray, now known as a common. It'll improve their cars, I guess, in what area, we're not quite sure, but really Willowbank 500 or the Queensland 500 will be a great race. It is the first of our endurance racing. Mark Scaife and I will be pairing up together, and if we can have the form like we did earlier in the year now, we'll be in, a good showing.
How have you enjoyed this year's championship? Certainly you haven't had the run that you have experienced in the previous times you've run in the championship when you got to this race and it was pretty much a foregone conclusion you were going to continue on.
Thank you. I guess, yeah, well, the first 3 years really went to plan, and we've had some great luck. We've had some great racing as well. And this year, I guess, as you said, it hasn't gone quite to plan. We've had some unfortunate DNFs where we haven't finished races. And really, unfortunately, that probably has hurt us more than what people think. The championship is very, very tough. There's a lot of competition out there. There's a lot of guys that are fighting for it. Garth Tander and Glenn Seaton are still not that far off Mark. Mark really needs to finish strong now, and hopefully I can help him in that area with these two long-distance races to come. So car speed's been great. The team's been fantastic. But as I said, just only not finishing a couple of races at the moment can really hurt your championship chances.
Looking at what they're doing with the undertrays now, and of course Ford getting the Holden undertray, it seems like it's a little bit closer step to the NASCAR ideals, and the idea of basically we all run, and in NASCAR next year it'll be all run with the same body, and basically the only thing that will be different on any of the cars is the engine.
Well, it will be, and that's something that I guess I'm a little concerned of. I'd hate for the category, my personal opinion is I hate the category to get to a situation where it is a NASCAR based type racing where all the undertray or all the mechanicals of the car are exactly the same and all we really do is put another body shape on it, and that's something I guess I wouldn't like personally to see. Whether that happens or not I don't know, but really at the moment the beauty is that we have a Ford and a Holden rivalry. It's something you go to any race, there's definitely the one-eyed Ford people and then the one-eyed Holden people, and then that's the way it should be. It's the rivalry that's always been there. It's in people in Australia, and that's what makes the motor racing so exciting.
But really, you wouldn't lose any of that if it was a control formula.
Well, it wouldn't, but I think what you would lose, and I think you're seeing it start to see it now, it's the cars brake the same distance, they corner the same speed, we got the same similar horsepower. Now it's like virtually follow the leader. There's no actually team out there at the moment that has that much better speed or cornering speed over anyone else. We're all pretty much the similar lap time. We saw that at Calder Park a couple of weeks ago. The first 25 cars were within a second, so it's very, very close and very tight at the moment. To have an advantage over anyone at the moment would be like winning the lotto.
And probably about as big a percentage of guests coming off with it.
At the moment, yes. And I think it's obviously it's healthy, and a lot of teams have, picked their pace up. We've improved, obviously, our car as well. Now, the team doesn't stop just because we're winning. We're developing new parts and new things all the time. And I think, really, our other teams have done just as much work as we have. And really, that's showing that. But as I said, unfortunately, I think we just get into a stage where all the cars are very, very equal in what they've got and what their makeup is. And really, unfortunately, the cars really, well, people won't see any passing, and that's what will hurt us in the long run.
What about your thoughts on the wings and the downforce that the cars are generating? Do you think maybe they need to look at getting rid of some of the add-on extras and just go back to A little bit like what they're talking about in the British Touring Car Championship, where they're going to be slipping and sliding all over the road.
Well, definitely that's what people come to see, is the cars up on two wheels, hitting curbs and flames coming out, shooting out of the exhaust, and if we have any more night racing, the brakes is glowing. It's just amazing. That's what people want to see. And really, how to achieve that is a very difficult question. I guess at the end of the day, to make an equal parity, I guess my feeling would be to grab the two manufacturers, grab a Falcon, grab a Commodore, get the rear wing the same efficiency with downforce, same amount of drag, and let teams then go design a front under tray. It gives a team something to work at, something to design. But at the end of the day, all teams can do is, balance the car up. Whatever the rear's got, we need to make the front to get. But how to do that, I guess that's where the engineers and the technicians of teams then can go into their own field and start working and developing. But that's my opinion, but really it just you're right, we need to make the cars move around a little bit more, make the drivers work probably a little bit harder, but make it more exciting when we drive these cars.
Well, Craig, big weekend coming up, and I would imagine it was a pretty big thrill over the weekend as well, being in Bathurst for that event, and we wish you all the best.
Thank you very much. It definitely was a great honour to be part of this whole exercise of the relay.
Yeah, and this weekend there's also racing going on elsewhere around the world. Everything isn't just happening here in Australia. And the American Le Mans Series has moved on to Texas Motor Speedway, and there Alan McNish has secured his third pole position of the season at Texas Motor Speedway, driving the Audi R8. His best time of 1 minute 13.242 seconds was less than 1/10 of a second ahead of teammate Emmanuel E. Pirro, who was disappointed to miss out on his first qualifying top spot of the season. So, looking at the grid for the American Le Mans Series race later tonight, Alan McNish is on pole from Emmanuel E. Pirro. Then you've got Jan Magnussen in the first of the Pinos Roadsters, Jean-Marc Gounon in the BMW V12 LMR, then Jörg Müller, another of the BMWs, Hiroki Kato in the second of the Pinozas, Carl Wendlinger heads up the GDSs, and then Dirk Müller. And interesting note there that I can't see that Brabham has qualified at this stage, so maybe he's left it to his teammates to do the qualifying, which is Jan Magnussen normally.
Yeah, so should be an interesting event, and I didn't even realise that Texas Motor Speedway had a road course there.
No, neither did I.
It's certainly more famous for the closest finished in IRL history.
No one saw.
All right. What about Little E's victory, his first ever NASCAR Winston Cup victory?
Yes, I think there's a few more people who saw that one.
Well, NASCAR is the topic of discussion as we get Peter Norton's postcard from Chisholm? Where is it?
Corwell.
Corwell. The postcard from Corwell.
Mario Andretti for Havilland Racing. Stay tuned for Inside Motorsports and all the news in the world of kart racing.
This weekend, the Kart FedEx Championship travels to the streets of Vancouver, where Team Cool Green celebrated the re-signing of both their drivers for the year 2001 by putting their cars on first and third position on the grid. And it was Dario Franchitti who was obviously very happy with his performance, taking pole position.
Yeah, it's just been a good day. We're in these positions on Sunday after the race. I'll be a happy boy.
It was clear that Team Cool Green and Penske were the class of the field in Vancouver, and this is what Dario Franchitti had to say about the threat coming from the Penske team.
Well, only time will tell on that one. I think the one thing we do have in common is the old Honda engine is working pretty strongly on the street courses, and it's obviously helping us. But the guys at Team Green have done a great job with the car. We're going to have to continue doing that throughout the weekend and improve it.
Also fast in Vancouver was the Team Penske with Jules Deferrin starting from second position, and this is what he had to say.
Things are running okay. I mean, we had a couple of problems to start with in the session this morning, but we've run okay from there on, and we're just making slow progress, and we'll see if we can beat Daddy tomorrow.
Starting third will be Canadian Paul Tracy, who was very happy to put all of the nonsense of the silly season behind him so he can concentrate back on the work at hand.
Good. I mean, I feel that I perform at my best when I'm comfortable and I'm not sneaking around trailers trying to talk to other team owners. So for me, You know, this deal has been done now for a couple of months, and we were waiting to announce it, waiting for what Dario was going to do. So, you know, I'm very happy with the current lineup that we have. Me and Dario will be teammates again and stay with Cool and Honda, and it's the best situation.
So that resolves two seats for the kart silly season. And, of course, the silly season has hit a frenzy with the Michael Andretti and Jimmy Vassar situation that they will not be staying with their current teams for the year 2001. And most interest, of course, is on Michael Andretti. He really is the trump card for kart. They have to retain him if they have any hope at all at increasing their market share in North America. The best speculation for Michael Andretti for the year 2001 is between Team Cool Green or the Ganassi team. Michael Andretti did indeed drive for Ganassi in 1994 when he returned to kart after his failed Formula One career. And the other opportunity for Michael Andretti seems to be with Team Green. This time it would be a third car, perhaps in Motorola colours, that would run alongside the Team Cool Green of Franchitti and Paul Tracy. With both of these teams, it's conceivable that Michael Andretti would only be spending a few races in the kart championship, perhaps for some of the higher profile events. His real focus would be on the Indy Racing League and his real target for next year, and that is winning the Indy 500. Well, that sounds like it's time for a NASCAR update. And this weekend, the NASCAR Winston Cup Series goes to Darlington in South Carolina for one of the classic events of the season, the Southern 500. It's a race with a lot of history, and Jeremy Mayfield will be starting off pole after using a lot of research and familiarity of the track to put in an excellent time.
Darlington's always been a place for us that we always run good, and you know, we always go back and look at our notes, and we run the same setup every time we come here, and we kind of showed up with that today, you know, and varied a little bit off of it, but still had enough to get to pole here, and probably the best class I've ever made right here.
Now, Jeremy Mayfield's had a pretty ordinary season so far in the year 2000, having to sit out two races with concussion, and has also been excluded from results of two other races for some mechanical infringements. And he's feeling pretty confident about this one, though.
I'm very optimistic, and that's what we need right now. You know, this team needs to win, and we're going to run hard, and if we don't win, it will be some lack of effort, I can tell you that.
Starting from second position will be the Pontiac of Johnny Benson, who was just aiming to get into the top 10.
I was real happy. I thought it was going to be decent. Thought we were going for top 10. Last few races, we were really good and thought maybe we had a shot at the pole, and a driver managed to really screw that up. So this time I just, well, let's just get in top 10, be nice and smooth, and we'll be all right.
And starting from third position will be Ward Burton, who had a fairly untidy lap, but it was fast nonetheless.
It wasn't very pretty, that's for sure. Pushed the nose a little bit going into one. Went to the throttle anyway, and they got the back end a little bit loose and pretty much carried that looseness all the way through up to the exit of two. But, you know, we'll take it. I think we'll end up starting the top five, and that'll be a great start spot for us for Sunday.
Well, you said it to me. You had to leave in Ward Burton, and isn't he like someone off King of the Hill, or you hear that Redneck by, who was that? The Redneck story by?
I've got no idea what you're talking about, but it's great to hear.
You must be a redneck.
It's one of those, sort of, yes, you must be a redneck wing. So it's one of those typical things that they do. The other news that's going on around the place during the week is if I can just find out, the provisional 2001 calendar for the World Rally Championship has been issued by the FIA Rallies Commission, and looks like they're going to jump things around, but Rally Australia stays in November 2nd to 4th, and still stays over in Western Australia. And actually, interesting to see this last week, the Telstra Rally Australia guys have been running some advertisements saying that the rally is definitely still in Western Australia. But this weekend as well sees the DTM, the revised, renewed, back with us German Touring Car Championship, taking place at the Lausitzring in Germany. And in qualifying there, we are aware that Bernd Schneider has qualified on pole position from Marcel Fassler. And then we have Pedro Lamy third. So it's Mercedes 1, 2 and 3. And now on the line from the Lausitzring, we've got a gentleman there from the ring. And how are things today for today's round of the DTM?
Well, we expect a lot of spectators, you know. Also, it's very, very bad weather conditions. We had bad rain this morning, but now the grandstands more or less are filled. And we are looking forward to a very exciting race, and we hope that the Opels will have we'll follow up with the Mercedes and we'll see.
Now, this year so far, it really has been the Mercedes and the Opels who've been dominating in the rounds that have taken place so far. Audi has not had much luck in the new DTM.
Well, I'm not sure it's a matter of having luck or not. They did not have enough time to develop their car in between the regulations in DTM. They did close up a little bit in the wet yesterday, so if the weather conditions will stay wet, we expect the Audis to be much quicker than in the dry, and they will have a chance somehow to go to drive into the point.
Now, the DTM is back after a couple of years absence, and the drivers that are there, we've got people like Bernd Schneider, who've driven for Mercedes-Benz at Le Mans. We have people like Klaus Ludwig, who's one of the more senior citizens of the German motor racing scene. Joe Winkelhock, who's won in DTM but also won in the British Touring Car Championship. It really is a championship that is bringing in drivers from all over Europe to compete.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, Klaus Ludwig, in fact, is one of the most successful touring car drivers in the world. Bernd Schneider was driving Formula One and then had his biggest successes in DTM, in touring car racing. Eric Ellery as well, a very, very quick French guy. Peter Dumbrick, a young guy. Very, very fast successful drivers. A good mixture between experienced guys like Klaus Ludwig, Bernd Schneider, and young Formula 3 drivers from last year like Marcel Fessler and so on. Well, a very, very good mixture and a very good potential to develop that championship over the next year.
And of course, one of the big things, you know, of course, for the team is the potential for other manufacturers to come in, because currently, as you say, there's Mercedes, Opel and Audi, but in the future there's talk of people such as, say, Alfa Romeo, Volvo and similar becoming involved in the championship, and that would be very good to see new manufacturers coming into the DTM.
Well, that discussion's going on in the background, and everybody is very confident to have more manufacturers from next year on.
Now, at this point of the championship, who is actually leading the DTM championship at this time?
It's Bernd Schneider.
Yeah, he seems to be one of those guys who can get into that car and wring its neck, as they say.
Norbert Haus yesterday said in a press conference that Bernd Schneider maybe is in the performance of his lifetime, and he never has been quicker than these days. And that's how it looks if you see Bernd performing outside on the track. It looks great.
Now, as you say, the weather has not been good at the last extreme. In terms of the weather today, does it look like it's going to improve at all, or possibly will they have a wet race?
There's still some hours to go for the race. We see some blue spots in the sky, so if we have a little bit of luck, we might have a dry race.
Well, hopefully you'll get a dry racer there and a big crowd, because, as we say, the DTM, it's making a big comeback onto the scene, and hopefully it's one of those championships that will just go to strength to strength over the following years.
Yeah, I'm sure. I mean, here the Euro Speedway in the region of Laos is new, the championship is new, and we see that all the people are very, very curious to see the championship, and if you see all the media outcome in Germany, in Europe, we are very confident that the championship will grow and develop very well.
Now, in terms of the DTM races, there just isn't the DTM cars that race during these race meetings. We believe also there's other championships that run in conjunction. One of them is a Porsche Cup Series, which we believe is an Australian by the name of Davidson, who's running in that championship as well.
Yeah, I mean, there's many races before and after the DTM, and yeah, exactly. It's Porsche as well, with a very international with international drivers. We got the international German Formula 3 Championship which is basically the single-seater championship from which the future Formula One drivers appear. So very, very exciting performance out on the track today.
And what sort of size crowds are being drawn to the DTM races these days?
Well, if the weather stays dry and if everybody is coming who has bought a ticket, we expect to have something like 60 to 70,000 spectators today.
That's a really good turnout, and hopefully
that's not so bad, considering it's the first time that the championship is here, and considering that the Euro Speedway is brand new. It's the first big event Euro Speedway here in Lausitz has. So it opened on the 20th of August, and now it's the first big event taking place.
So this is the first real major meeting. Of course, later in the year, I think, or if you've got in some stage in the future, a kart championship race there as well.
Exactly. Champ Car will come next year. And, as well, everybody's very, very keen to see Champ Cars here driving on this tri-oval.
Well, thank you very much for your time with us this evening here in Australia on Inside Motorsport, and hope we wish you a very good day's racing there at the Lausitzring.
Thank you very much. You're welcome. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Yes, and Mr. Miller there from Miller Marketing looking after the Lausitzring media, and I'm not sure, I didn't quite get the whole story, but we should have had Mark Webber come into the studio so he could have spoken to these people from Germany having all that Mercedes experience. It would have helped us a great deal anyway, just a moment, because I'm not sure whether he actually looks after the entire series, so we now will be able to cover that series a little bit better.
Mm.
But the Champ Car series going there is going to be an interesting one, and the visit there, particularly to England. I think it's...
Rockingham?
Yep. Yeah, Rockingham, which is going to be an interesting race as well, which, the Richard Petty driving experience is going to be opening up at that track, and I think at the Euro Speedway as well. And currently, they have 1,000 days of track time. It's an unbelievable amount of time, and just fascinating to see how far that the Petty experience, the Richard Petty experience, has gone.
It's amazing what you can do when you've got a very valuable name to put on your product, and there's plenty of motorsport fans out there who would just love to jump into one of these things.
In fact, a friend of mine who I'll be visiting in the next couple of weeks went to the Texas Motor Speedway 2 weeks ago now, and took a ride around there and said that it was just one of the most unbelievable experiences of his life. Now, he's been a motorsport follower for about 55 years, so he wasn't a young man when he jumped into that car. It was an ex-Joe Gibbs racing car, and he said he hit the ripple strip once when he was up to speed, which he said up to speed was about 120, 130 miles per hour, so probably about 40 miles per hour slower than Little Lee was running around there when he took victory. But he said he hit the ripple strip once, and he said he certainly changed the underwear that he was wearing, because he said the car felt like it jumped about halfway up the track, and where in fact it moved about an inch. But the other interesting thing, which we might be seeing up here in Goulburn very soon at Wakefield Park, is they had in-car cameras for the entire journey. So he has got a in-car camera video, to that NTSC, which means not the same colour, but he does have a complete in-car camera footage of his experience of running around there. He did about 2 10-lap sessions for, I think it was about $1,500.
Yeah, I think for the money you'd want to relive that glory over and over and over, I think. Yeah, I can imagine sort of some of the colour effects, you know, as you said, that colour couldn't be lifelike. Yes, it is. You should have seen him when he hit the brakes. But if we jump back to, we were talking about just before we went over the journey, was the 2001 World Road Championship calendar. The calendar kicks off in January 19th, 21st, the Monte Carlo Rally, then February 9th to 11th, the Swedish Rally, March 9th to 11th, the Rally of Portugal, March 23rd to 25th, the Catalonia Rally, May 4th to 6th, Rally Argentina, June 1 to 3rd, the Acropolis Rally, June 15 to 17, the Cyprus Rally. Now, that one is subject to an observer's report from the rally that's run there this year. July 13 to 15, Safari Rally in East Kenya. August 10th to 12th, Rally Finland. Rally New Zealand moves to their new time slot next year in September 21st, 23rd, which is actually much warmer, much drier than the traditional time frame they look at. October 6 to 7th, San Remo Rally. October 9th, 21st, the Corsica Rally. November
2-4, Rally Australia, and the season finishes on November 23rd, 25th with the Rally of Great Britain. So should be a good and interesting season for the World Rally Championship, and I'll say it's going to be a great old season for the rally guys.
But good to see the fact that
some of the rallies have been moved around to give better weather than what the rally drivers have experienced in the past in the World Rally Championship.
Mm. Well, one man who knows a bit about rallying and is also going to be enjoying the tarmac next weekend is Neil Bates. And Neil, everything prepared? How did the test go on Monday, more particularly, for your run in the Queensland 500 next weekend?
Yeah, the test went really well. We didn't really start until lunchtime because it was very wet in the morning, but we got the whole afternoon in and it was really good. I felt very comfortable and I'm looking forward to the Queensland 500.
Yep. Now, which track were you testing at, Neil?
We tested at Winton.
At Winton. So nice and tight and twisty.
Yeah, sure was. As I say, I was very happy there, and HRT were testing at the same time, and Todd Kelly was out there at one stage at the same time as me, and we were doing exactly the same time, so I've got to be pretty happy with that.
Mm. Toilets were working when you were there?
Beg your pardon?
The toilets were working at Winton?
Oh, I didn't actually use them. I didn't have any scares, so I didn't need them, but I think all that's sorted out.
Now, since you've driven the Falcon in the past, this is now probably the first time you've driven it with the new undertray. Did you feel any difference between the car with the new undertray set up?
Well, the car feels so much nicer than what it did last year. I couldn't actually say it was the undertray or whatever making a difference, but certainly the car feels very good and I'm sure it'll be competitive next weekend.
Yeah, your teammate next weekend, of course, it comes off hot to trot from winning the V8 Lights Championship, which is young Dean Canto. So have you had a chance to talk with Dean?
Yeah, he was there on Monday as well, so he's a very nice guy and we seem to get on well, so I can't see there being any problems there except for our difference in height.
Is there quite a noticeable difference?
He's actually very small. I think he's only just 5 foot, so I've got to have the seat a bit far forward and he's got to have it a bit far back for him, but we sort of got a package that suited both of us, so that was good.
Last year, pit stop really cost you a much higher finish. Has there been much talk about that and how everything's going to work together in that important part of the long distance race?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that problem won't happen again. That was just a silly mistake that should have never happened, but it did, so I'm sure they'll be well on top of that this year.
And of course, the pit stops are such an important part of Australia when you go for a long-distance race that, it can either make or break.
Absolutely. You know, last year was just a simple mistake of not doing it in the window of the pad change, which was very silly. But as I say, I'm sure that won't happen again. And they were actually practicing pit stops a lot at Winton last weekend and noting it pretty quick. But I'm sure everyone's doing the same sort of things.
Mm. And to see the HRT car on the same day and seeing the times that Todd Kelly was putting out, who has raced the car quite a bit this season, it would indicate that FTR are right on the money and coming into the end of the season now, your teammates Glenn Seaton and Neil Crompton are going to be in with a big shake as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that Glenn and Neil have got a very good chance of winning the event and we hope, we can be there to back up and I'd love to finish somewhere. I'd love to finish in the top three, but I'd be very happy with the top five.
Yeah, it is going to be...
These days you've got to be happy with the top ten.
Yeah, it is going to be a pretty tough outing for everyone there in the Queensland 500. Neil, thanks for stopping by, thanks for talking to us, and we look forward to seeing how you go on Channel 10 next weekend.
No problems at all. Thank you.
Neil Bates joining us once again. 3 weeks in a row for Neil, so...
Yeah, we've
got any other phone numbers in our phone.
But the thing is, Neil is actually probably, in terms of having his eye and following the Rally of Melbourne and so on, that's the thing, he's going to be his top performer, and his ribs will have healed by then. So, but in other news overseas during the week, they actually...
You can't get me in any more trouble, can you?
Yeah. But during the week over in England, they had a meeting at Heathrow Airport on Wednesday with the movers and shakers of Formula One.
There can't be a Concorde agreement because they're all grounded.
Yeah, that's right. But yeah, they all the team bosses and Max Mosley and Bernie Eccleston all got together to try and discuss key issues about Formula One and how to make it, sort of look at the rules and how it can work for the future, and apparently
get rid of the wings, a bit like their supercars.
Well, they had a 7-hour meeting stuck in a conference room at Heathrow Airport, so they had the meeting and they basically got nowhere. They talked about things like reintroducing practice Grand Prix on Friday. They're talking about, you know, reducing testing, making more tyres available, how to make the whole show work better. And as a result of the fact they couldn't come to any concrete decisions, the meeting will reconvene at Monza during next weekend's Italian Grand Prix. And the other part is that one of the things they're talking about is introducing into next year's calendar a three-week midsummer break where there will be no racing and a complete testing ban. It's also believed that the FIA, Max Mosley, is...
What would be the benefit of that?
Well, it's the middle of the European summer, so that means the teams and crews can have some time off in the middle of their season. But, yes... I have any suspicion that the time frame also falls some of the major sporting events in Europe where they want to sort of, you know, television coverage is a bit of a problem.
Yeah, let's make sure we get all the events when it can rain and really make it soggy and miserable and keep the crowd at home, a la Silverstone this year.
Yeah, but they're also talking about a ban on testing on all current Grand Prix circuits between races. So effectively you could only turn up to the circuit and race it. You wouldn't be allowed to test it. And that Paul Ricard's circuit in France would be the sole nominated test track for all teams, and guess who owns Paul Ricard?
Yeah, Mr. Eccleston, I guess.
That's right.
Yeah.
So, and I wonder how much he'd be charging him for the privilege of doing that.
Well, if it's $6,000 just to turn up to cover the race for him, it must be about $1 million just to test on his track.
Mm. So that's the problem which they've got currently, but they were testing at Monza the last week. And on the final day of testing, the fastest driver there...
Second fastest was the one that really was a shot out of the blue.
Yeah, apparently the thing was...
But who was fastest anyway?
Fastest one was Ralf Schumacher and the Williams BMW. Second fastest was Rubens Barrichello and the Ferrari. Third fastest was Jano Trulli, showing up his spa performance was not a flash in the pan. Pedro de la Rosa in Arrows was fourth. Heinz Harald Frentzen was fifth and the second for Jordans. Olivier Panis, who was testing for McLaren Mercedes, was sixth. Jenson Button 7th, Michael Schumacher 8th in the Ferrari, Pedro Diniz 9th, Eddie Irvine 10th, Alexander Wurz 11th, Mika Salo 12th before he heads off to Toyota in the Sauber Petronas, and Yoel Lazy 13th in the Peugeot. Apparently there was a bit of a difference going on in terms of the drivers and cars were going on. Ralf Schumacher, he was doing a qualifying run type setup where Jenson Button was doing a race distance simulation, so his times... where he was did the 7,000 times probably a bit more indicative of the times the other guys would be doing. Pedro de la Rosa, he also damaged his car. He damaged the rear suspension when the car went off. He was doing tyre testing work and something went wrong with the tyres. So it wasn't good for him. But good to see you know, the times there, and everybody's getting ready for Monza. I actually have some friends who are over in Italy currently with the United Nations, and that the son is a mad Tifosi, and he's already got his tickets.
Yeah, it'd be lucky tough boy. Going to that race, wouldn't it? Look, last weekend was the IRL race at the brand new speedway. We're talking brand new speedways all over the world here, and it was at Kentucky. Scott Goodyear picked up the points and also consolidated his points lead in the IRL championship, and he broke the media soon after the event.
This is really what we needed. It was a hard day. I'm not kidding. My gearbox... I had really abused my gearbox. Thank God that my gearbox builder is so good because...
Yeah, well, his gearbox was the thing that got abused, but even with a dud gearbox, he still was able to come back and pick up the victory there in the next to last, I think, round of the IRL. And, of course, Texas Motor Speedway is where that one will finish off. But it seems like, well, it's going to be a tough run down to the wire. And, in fact, that was Buddy Lazier. I can't... Yeah, it's the pole man Scott Goodyear chased hard to finish second whilst he was seeing the rookie, Sarah Fisher, taking out third position. So for Goodyear, who was in second position, we might hear now from him as he spoke to the media soon after the event.
This is really what we needed. It was a hard day. I'm not kidding. My gearbox was... I had really abused my gearbox. Thank God that my gearbox builder is so good because I had lost some gears, and right when I came through the start-finish line and I lifted off the throttle, I broke fifth gear. So, I mean, literally, it was just our day. I mean, everything went our way. Scott Goodyear was coming hard, but you know, we were able to hold him off. So it was a real good day for us. Just what we needed.
That time it was, in fact, Scott Goodyear. He got the points. The points now see Goodyear 220, Lazier 258, Shiva 217, Dismore 186, Salazar 180, Sharp 179, Buell 178, Beechler 174. Beechler was actually, wasn't Beechler. Under Junior 173, McGee 168 is the championship standings at the moment. But alright, I go for anyone in a Foyt car, and you're going to rub it in right now, aren't you?
Yes, I recall that last week we ventured a few tips, and I'll take credit for picking second there, that the Canadian Scott Goodyear. And as you were reading down the point score, I was waiting and waiting and waiting.
To hear a Foyt car?
No, well, more importantly, little Al Unser Jr. He's really weighed down the back there a bit in the point score.
Yes, and next meeting he'll come out and win because you bagged him. Here is Buddy Lazier. Perhaps. Eventually, Buddy will do that.
Yeah, we'll take the points. Fortunately, we just couldn't get the car stuck down in traffic and would lose it and lose some time there, unfortunately. A couple of the other guys actually got through traffic a little bit better than we did. We just kind of lost the front end, made some changes throughout the run, and certainly went well, but didn't get any help from any lap cars, so I guess we'll pay back someday on that program.
Well, you can tell the AFL season has finished because there's no AFL show turned up here to do it. We're going to plod along, and I think plod is the point at this stage.
Interesting during the week the fact that the man from Gala Shields in Scotland is coming back again this year to run in the FIA 1000 at Bathurst. That's John Clelland, the former British Touring Car Championship driver, who's driven a number of times at Bathurst over the years. His best record to date, a fifth with the Pinnacle Motorsport Commodore with Tony Scott. He's also raced with Peter Brock, Mark Scaife, Derek Warwick, and last year shared Cameron McLean's Falcon. And this year he's coming back to run with Rodney Forbes in the Wins Commodore. The fact that Paul Morris has elected to go across to Macau and race in a super production class BMW over there for the BMW factory team means that John Clelland was called, and naturally enough he's happy to come charging down to Australia and to answer the call to run at Bathurst. And of course, the Australia, he just loves running at Bathurst, and as always, he will be one of the fun parts of the media conferences, because if he gets into a media conference, he is guaranteed to have everybody in stitches. He has a sense of humour that is a mile wide.
And he shoots straight, too.
He shoots straight, and he can always come up with the right comment at the right time and can make the other driver look like a complete and utter fool. But, yeah, it'll be good to see John Clelland back again. He always enjoys himself when he comes down to Bathurst, and no doubt he'll be one of the drivers looking to try and improve on his past performances there.
Well, let's just hope that the V8 Supercar publicity team doesn't dampen his enthusiasm for making those comments.
Mm. Well, I must admit, you know, he's a very hard man to keep quiet. He always knows exactly when to drop what he wants to say right in it. But he's actually going to be there with quite a few. He's got Jason Plato, Ivan Muller. He's got the whole crowd there this year, so it's going to be like old town week.
It's going to look like a BTCC race in Australia, and well, that won't be a bad thing. There's been plenty of good racing going on over there. One thing that's been plenty of good racing is in the Group N class of the Australian Rally Championship. Ed Adinsky joins us on the line, and Ed, you've had quite an interesting year, and this young upstart is really giving it to you.
Well, I guess you're talking about Cody Crocker, and he's been fantastic. And when I first met Cody some years ago, you know, he was obviously a great talent in the making. Like a lot of young Australian drivers, we've got an enormous depth of talent here.
Yeah, he's certainly been taking every opportunity in the Subaru, but for yourself in the Mitsubishi, you've been making some good ground on him right throughout the championship series, and as we come towards Rally Australia, you'll be looking to get that Group N championship or Group N title for Rally Australia right back.
Well, I mean, that would be the target now. I think the national championship in Group N this year is looking pretty grim. But, you know, you have to keep everything in perspective, and when I was running in Group N the last 4 years, from, I think, about 93 through to 96, you know, we won the Group N championship, and that wasn't such a terrific thing for the sport. We didn't have strong competition, and then I was out of Group N for two seasons. Cody came in, won the championship a couple of years, and there are another half dozen guys there right on the pace. So if you want the sport to grow and have, you know, half a dozen people capable of winning the series, then you have to accept that you're not going to win them all. And we certainly haven't been, and it's been terrific for us and for Mitsubishi Rally to have to fight for every result we can get. But Rally Oz is the big target, and whether you win the championship or not, that's the event you have to perform at. You know, I often say to people to win there over in Perth, to win a round of the World Rally Championship in Group N, is no different, you know, to say Craig Lowndes winning the Melbourne Formula One Grand Prix or something like that. It's a terrific achievement and one that I'd dearly love to be able to do again.
So in terms of this year at the Telstra Rally Australia over there in Western Australia, what is your aim for the Mitsubishi Rally Art Lancer when you get over there?
Well, the aim is to try and win Group N. It's something I've managed to achieve seven times in the past. I missed out last year, came second, and that was largely a result of a couple of punctures that I caused myself through overdriving. But, you know, again, at World Championship level, there's a good 10 or 12 drivers capable of winning the round. All the top teams will be here. Cody, of course, would be desperate to win the round as well, and it's just going to be fantastic.
You have, first up, though, the Tasmanian round of the ARC Super Series to get through, and, of course, the scheduling of that is quite disappointing because it's on the same weekend as the closing ceremony at the Olympics.
Yeah, it is, I guess, a problem for those who pre-booked Olympic tickets. You know, and from a coverage of the sport point of view, all of those things, it had to be moved because it clashed with a round of the Asia-Pacific Championship. And there are some Australian competitors doing the Asia-Pacific series, like Simon Evans and Possum Board. So, you know, they were left with no option, and it is unfortunate. But I guess with the way the TV works, the event is shown, you know, a week afterwards and so on, so the coverage should still be there.
Now, what we've seen in some of the, for example, the FIA Rally of Canberra here, is the fact that the Mitsubishi Lancers can take it up to the Possum Bournes and the Neil Bates in the outright class. Do you think that maybe it's about time Mitsubishi Australia started looking at the AMSA giving you an outright WRC car to go and take it to those guys at that class and level?
No, not at all. You know, in the so-called outright class, there's only the two World Rally cars, a two-horse race. Group N is a far, far more competitive category. You know, there are 6, 8, 10 cars all capable of winning. And to some degree, you have to be realistic and say that the guts of the national championship is in fact in Group N, not in the two-horse race out front. We've got a situation where, you know, if V8 supercars was to follow what's happening in rallying, they'd let, say, you know, Glenn Seaton and Lowndesy have one V8 supercar each and then put the rest of the field in standard Commodores. And, you know, they wouldn't have much of a race series then, and that's the situation we have in the National Championship with those two out front. So we either have to have not just Mitsubishi join with a World Rally car, but another half dozen competitors, and realistically that's never going to happen. Or I think Mitsubishi's far better to do what they're doing and focus where the action is.
So, yeah, so certainly by seeing the Group N, they're going for where they see their biggest market potential as well.
Well, you know, World Championship rallying and our National Championship rallying is the only form of motorsport that uses recognisable production cars that people can actually go and buy off the showroom floor, and Group N is the only category that adheres to that, so it has tremendous marketing possibilities.
Now, there had been some talk of some rule changes trying to open up the Group A category to some of the other manufacturers and getting more than just a two- or three-horse race by banning the active differentials. Has anything come of those discussions?
No, and it's, you know, as far as I'm concerned, it's absolutely pie in the sky. Here we are in September, and if anyone realistically thinks they're going to run a car capable of winning at rallies outright and get their act together between now and the first round of the championship, they're kidding themselves. You know, you need at least 12 months lead time. We have run a Group A car with active diffs and so on before we were, you know, sidelined a couple of years back. And, you know, it's not something you can just quickly do between now and Christmas. It needs a lot of planning. If you're going to run a World Rally car or a car capable of beating World Rally cars, you would not only need to have secured the vehicle, you have to have a specialised tyre deal, because when you consider Possum and Neil both have one-off tyre deals on special Michelins or Pirellis, you'd need to have that locked away, and you'd need to have your service team mechanics all trained on those cars with experience in the field. Now, you just aren't going to do that between now and the end of the year, and anyone who says they are is either going to front with something very uncompetitive or is just having a lend of us.
for the championship, though. In the last few years, we've seen the marketing of it really start to get a bit more slick. And I guess with, of course, the project group's involvement, it has really helped kick on and build up the Australian Rally Championship, which was languishing somewhat to the circuit racing divisions.
Oh, absolutely. You know, it's now one of the four running national championships anywhere in the world. It has really terrific depth of field. See, as you've so rightly pointed out, you know, the only dilemma facing the national championship is, at the moment, is that the two world rally cars, the Toyota and the Subaru, the very cars that were responsible for bringing the project group along, for getting the television coverage on Channel 10, and let's face it, for providing the most of the spectacle in the championship, the very fact that there are only two of them is the biggest problem facing our sport. And the reality is that Australia is too small a country to afford cars, you know, that cost $1 million each to get hold of, let alone to run.
And I guess being a Mitsubishi man as you are, seeing Michael Guest, a fellow Australian, doing reasonably well in the World Rally Championship does give everyone a bit of heart, and it sort of says, well, I wish I had got over there sooner, but he's over there and we wish him all the best.
Yeah, he's driving Hyundai, not Mitsubishi though.
Okay, I'm glad I don't keep up with the times.
Yeah. The other thing is, in the past, you've driven a couple of times in the V8s and so on. Any sort of urge for you to jump back into that field of things if the opportunity arises?
I would love to do it. And, you know, in 95 when I did Sandown and Bathurst, it was, you know, a toe in the water and a step in the right direction. But, you know, I had also won the Round Australia trial that year in a Commodore, and Mitsubishi asked me if I would like to sign up and be 100% loyal to the company, and it was a good career move for me, and I've got a wonderful career with Mitsubishi and a good future with them. So, unfortunately, unless we're able to run a Mitsubishi in V8 supercars, I can't compete.
Well, there's always that talk they keep saying about them creating a V8 Mitsubishi Magna for the V8 supercars along with the Toyota Avalon, I think, as well. So, who knows, there might be an opportunity for you yet.
Well, you know, V8 supercars faces the very same dilemma we've been discussing with rallying, where the two-horse race has worked very well up until now, and Australia is a country of Holden and Ford fans in that form of racing. But, you know, it doesn't have the depth of manufacturer support that other forms of motorsport have, and, you know, they're continually facing the situation, what if Ford, for example, were to pull out, where would that leave the series? And it would just be marvellous if other manufacturers were able to race in what is Australia's premier motorsport category.
Now, Ed, you mentioned the fact that, you know, you are signed with Mitsubishi. Other than just doing the rally championships, do you do other things for them in terms of promotion or driver training, those type of things?
Oh, yeah, far more than participating in the rallies. You know, most drivers who run professionally have sponsorship, endorsement services, contracts with their manufacturers, and I'm no different. So my work can be writing articles for the company through to running drive days, fleet days, and so on.
And no doubt days where you take some of the dealers or senior management around the forest and try to scare the hell out of them, as they say.
Oh, that is one of the best parts of the job. And
or shake more money out of them.
Pardon?
Shake more money out of them?
No, it's not the case. You know, we're pretty well budgeted for the Group N Championship, and I can't complain at the equipment I've got through Mitsubishi Rally Art or the budget we've had the last couple of seasons. But it's just fantastic to be able to let other people experience what the sport is like, and I think we're seeing that in all forms of motorsport, that the drive days, the opportunity to give sponsors and clients of your sponsors rides in the car is happening all over the place, and rally is one of the simplest forms of motorsport to be able to do it, because the cars are able to be driven to the appropriate venue and they have passenger seats in them.
And the old story is that normally you'd have the navigator there telling you which way to go. This time it's your chance to go your own way, as they say.
Well, we've done some fantastic corporate days where we've really put the passenger in there with taste notes. We've even run it at night and given them a taste of what it's like in the dark, just with, you know, a couple of driving lights and going full speed through the trees. It's just it's fantastic to see people's responses.
Yeah, is this one of those things where that you look at having a video camera so you can record their faces and show them afterwards?
I wouldn't embarrass them. I think you know, a photo once they've settled down is probably more appropriate.
Yeah. Well, look, thanks very much for joining us this evening on Inside Motorsport and having a bit of chat to us about the Mitsubishi Rally Art team and your own, the Mitsubishi Lancer. And we'll probably be in contact with you for the final round of championship down there in Tasmania.
Thanks very much for your interest.
Thank you very much. Ed Orinsky, he's been around, I think, in Australian rallying for as long as I can remember, and sort of either as a young fella coming up and then, as you said, winning with Group N over a number of years. And, again, one of those easy to talk to people.
He is, and always has got a great view on life and the world. And also, I know that you tree dodgers out there, Peter Norton, like to go out and see him because he's not as flashy as a Simon Evans, but he certainly gets the job done.
Yes, I remember quite well when the Round Australia Rally came through Canberra, and some of the bigger names were leading at that point. You know, the P. Brocks and a few others of the world, and they were really quite untidy through this particular stretch that we were spectating at, and Ed came through so fast, so smooth, and it really did have all of the marks of someone who could keep that up for the 20-odd thousand kilometres for the whole lap, and yes, he did it quite easy in the end.
Mm. Yeah, it's a difference from seeing with drivers. So those who can go fast and look so smooth, you get those who go fast and they look like they're working every inch of the car to get that speed out of it. And often that's the difference between the champions and the also-rans, I think. The guy can actually be sympathetic with the car.
Mm. Well, I don't know. You look like you've got another story ready to go because otherwise we can have a chat about karting for a few moments. But, Colin?
Well, basically, the latest word is that Damon Hill has returned to motorised racing, but this time it was on a powerboat off Cowes in the UK. He went for a race with 7-time powerboat champion Steve Curtis as a navigator, and in this case the driver has all the controls, and Damon Hill acted as the navigator for the race and apparently had a bit of fun doing it, and one of those things is a case of one of the things he always thought it would be interesting to try. The opportunity came along, so he did. And somebody asked him the question, is there a racing line in powerboat racing? And he said, if there is, I didn't find it.
How difficult is it to navigate in one of these racing boats? You just sort of go straight.
Now, I think it's one
They turn.
So they have different buoys that you have to navigate, so out so many kilometres, and then you come to a particular buoy and you have to turn and so on.
I think... Was that offshore?
Offshore.
Mm. It was offshore. These fellas are maniacs on this offshore racing. I got to see some footage of it, and they're like, you know, surf that, you know, most people would go, not even going near the water. These fellas are just crashing through. It's also cost a couple of former Formula One world champions their lives, this powerboat racing too. Mm. So it's not to be scoffed at.
Yeah. It's the navigating that I think would be quite simple. You just say, well, keep the land on the left.
Mm. The interesting comments from Damon Hill is that apparently it was pretty rough out there, and he said at one time we got behind another boat, it was like somebody turning on a fireman's hose on you. You can't see a thing, and I think it lived up to all its reputation, getting soaked and tearing up tenors and all that. The boat speed, top speed, is 55 miles per hour, but it doesn't feel like that. So this is the usual trick that because the thing is actually sort of pounding, and the thing is too, they actually stand up on these, they actually don't sit, because the idea is that the legs take all the impact as they bounce from wave to wave. So, very interesting stuff to get involved with. And, of course, they keep rumouring that Damon Hill is possibly going to make an appearance next year if they can coax him with enough dollars in the new British Touring Car Championship. So that's interesting stories going on there. The other thing, too, is that Honda, in terms of British Touring Car Championship, are talking about whether they're going to stay in next year or whether they'll go across to the European Super Touring Cup in 2001. And at this point in time, it appears that very likely they may take their factory team to run in that championship. They see it as being more advantageous to them trying to go with the new 2001 rules. But they say that the possibility that if the Euro Super Touring Cup in 2001 changes to the British Touring Car rules, well, then they'll change their mind as well. So they're trying to cover their bets both ways.
Mm. All right. Jim Patterson caught up with Sean Henshelwood from Cardos magazine a couple of weeks ago, in fact, as they were getting set for the third round of the APS karting series out there at Eastern Creek Raceway, and it has been a fairly interesting championship so far, the APS series, and Sean Henshelwood and Jim Patterson had this opportunity to speak about it.
A point of the four-round series, Eastern Creek, of course, this weekend, August 20 for finals.
We've got probably Australia's best karting drivers, no probably about it, undoubtedly Australia's best karting drivers competing for the honours in Formula A, which is the elite class in Australia, the class which Sydney's James Courtney, of course, won the 1997 World Championships in, Intercontinental A and Junior Intercontinental A. It's the halfway point of the series. We've got a couple of runaway leaders in the two senior classes. Neil McFadden, of course, is the 1998 junior champion, the 1999 Intercontinental A champion, and currently he's 2 from 2 in Formula A, which most people expected to be a little bit harder for him, but the talented young Sydney driver looks like he's going on for bigger things.
All right, now Formula A, now are we talking about pretty potent sort of machines here, or are they just basically stock standard go-karts?
No, nothing like a stock standard go-kart. These karts are actually fairly similar to Formula One. Now, a lot of people will go tongue-in-cheek and say, well, yeah, sure. In fact, they will pull similar G-forces in a corner to a Formula One car. Such is their level of grip and such is their level of power. The engines, of course, are putting out a relatively high performance output. They will be pulling around 30 horsepower with engines running at about 22,000 RPM out of the two-stroke engines. And that's for about half an hour, so it's a fairly intense period of time. These guys can be fairly badly bruised and battered around. In fact, funnily enough, not too long ago, David Bernard, who won the V8 Light Series, he was one of Australia's leading karters. The violence of the top-level open karts, of which Formula A and Intercontinental A and Junior Inter are part of the open international classes, he was warned off that level of competition because it was so violent, it was starting to do a lot of harm to his ribs and things like that. So you really get no sensation of what these things are like until, A, you see them, or at the very best, compete in them yourself.
Well, I have never competed at that level, but I know what a neck-snapping experience it was just driving an ordinary go-kart with a fiberglass helmet on, and when I got out, I didn't realise just how much strain I was putting on my neck with the G-forces that were applying in fairly tight corners with the weight of a fiberglass helmet on my head.
Oh, it's amazing, and that's just a standard kart with probably under 10 horsepower and not a great level of grip. These things are so sticky at the end of the race, the tyres, that it takes two guys to actually physically lift them off the racetrack. It's a bit like walking onto chewing gum.
Yeah.
It's an amazing thing, and some of these guys are very, very fit.
All right. Now, you've been talking about the ABS karting series, but what about the Ford Match Challenge? I believe there's some interesting articles about that in this month's magazine.
Well, the Ford Match Challenge is a completely different series. The Rotax Match engine is a recreational engine. The Ford Match Challenge was a bit of an initiative between Drew Price Engineering, who of course make the fairly popular Arrow chassis in Australia, and Ford Australia, to try and create a series where everything was equal, where the all the drivers were thrown in with equal equipment, and it was really their ability that would bring them to the fore. The interesting thing, of course, is the guys that you see running at the front of the APS racing series, where they can run different karts, different engines and different tyres, the same guys running at the front of the Ford Max Challenge with identical equipment. So it makes for an interesting series.
Yeah, so the Ford Max Challenge is, I guess, the go-kart equivalent of the Formula 2 or
Formula Ford. Essentially, Formula that's Ford. What they were looking at. Formula Ford, I think Ford were, correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe the initiative was for years to come for Formula Ford to be a one-make series with one chassis, one engine, and obviously control tyres. And they're trying to make the karting series with the Max engine, which is a fairly reliable, relatively high horsepower engine, follow those lines. So it was a natural progression from the Ford Max Challenge to a Formula Ford.
All right, now, the name Troy Hunt, where does... I mean, every time I mention go-karts recently, people have been saying to me, keep your eyes open for Troy Hunt.
Troy's one of a talented group of drivers in Australia. There's quite a few now. Obviously, he's taken his art to Europe. He's 10th placing in the World Championships in Formula A. That's Australia's elite category last year. Now, he didn't win that series in Australia, yet he went to Europe, raced the World Championships, finished 10th, and was offered a contract in the absolute elite karting class, which is Formula Super A. That's the class that Jenson Button won the European Championship in 1997, in which Troy contested the European Championship so far this year, four rounds.
How's he been going?
He had a best result first up of fifth, qualified 12th in his very first race and finished fifth. Went like a rocket, and after that he had a nasty altercation with his teammate. In the second, they run two finals in each of the four rounds.
Mm.
The second one he was running as high as third with his teammate, and they had a nasty collision together. And his teammate was out with a broken elbow for some 7 weeks, I believe. But Troy then became the team leader of Top Kart at the Super A level. And he progressed on from there. He had a number of top 10 finishes and a number of DNFs, as he said when he was in town not too long ago to take out the $10,000 Townsville prize. He'd like to go back next year and just show them he's learnt a thing or two.
All right, that would be great. And I guess, to relate that back to the Ford Max Challenge, that's a little bit like the Formula Ford guys in Australia. They go over there and try and get a seat in Formula 2 or something of that ilk so that they can maybe make a career out of it.
Oh, certainly. Troy's got a number of options open. In fact, interestingly, there's two other Australians that have been running fairly competitively at the top level of karting, the Formula Super A class again. One is Ben Horseman, who hails from Orange in New South Wales. He's been over there a number of years. He actually made the podium this year in the European Championships in Super A. And Ryan Briscoe is another young driver who probably follows on about 12 months behind James Courtney, who drives for the elite Tony Kart team in Super A, and also in the gearbox class, which is the absolute top level. These guys are running about 180 kilometres now and have just a little bit more horsepower and gears to contend with. No clutch, but gears. And he's about to make an announcement in the not-too-distant future about a fairly lucrative career overseas.
Mm, all right. So so what you're saying from that is that you can make a living racing go-karts.
Oh, certainly. Talking to Briscoe's father not too long ago, he believes that probably worst-case scenario, young Ryan might have a lucrative German Touring Car Championship contract on the table in the not-too-distant future.
Oh, well, I suppose that's one way to go about it, and it might even be quicker, by the sound of that, than racing Formula Ford in Australia, because you'd probably have a couple of seasons of that before you had to go overseas.
Oh, certainly. There are fairly great progressions through karting. You need to get to the top level. You need to achieve something like Troy Hunt has achieved. It's open doors to get to the very top level. From there, here's a for instance, the guy who won the Formula A European Championship this year is sponsored by Ron Dennis and Keke Rosberg. Now, Ron Dennis owns the McLaren Formula One team, and Keke Rosberg was, correct me if I'm wrong, the 1985 world champion. The two drivers in that class, one of which was Rosberg's son, he finished second in the championship. The team leader of the class is a young British guy by the name of Lewis Hamilton. Lewis Hamilton won with maximum points. You score from 5 of the 8 final races. Your maximum score from that takes you through to the championship. Now, he won absolutely the maximum points. He won 5 races out of 8 to give him maximum points and the European Championship. He's already part of a Formula One team. So these teams are starting to look at karts and create their own teams to start a bit of a breeding ground, I guess, as it were, to get the drivers of the future.
All right, well, that's a quick look at what's happening in the general sense, but what have you got out in the latest edition of Kart Oz magazine? Because Craig's got the local edition, the local copy, and I can't tell anyone.
Well, there's a few things coming up. We've taken a few looks at what's happening with the future of Australian karting, where it's going. There's a fairly major issue on the cards at the moment with regard to choosing the tyres that we're going to race on for the next 3 years. That's a decision that every karter has to make over the course of the next couple of weeks prior to a national conference in the beginning of September. We've also looked at an alternative to the Rotax Max engine, if you like, with the Sonic 125 water-cooled electric start clutched engine. Follows pretty much the same variation as the Rotax Max, but uses more of a karting background than the Rotax's Aprilia Motorcycle Association. We've also taken a good look at the Ford Max Challenge to date at the halfway point in that series, and a bit of a preview to the forthcoming CIK round for the APS Racing Series this weekend coming at Eastern Creek.
Alright, so it looks like there's plenty of news in the magazine, Carling Oz, and we'll be back in touch with you. I dare say Craig will be back in touch with you in the not too distant future to keep us up to speed with what's going on.
That'll be great. Thanks for your time.
Yes, and thanks very much. to Jim Patterson there for filling in for me with Sean Henchelwood. Well, one man who's seeing a lot of changing over in the West is ConMigro, and the Motorplex, the continuation of that major building project is going on, and I hope the weather has been quite good for you over this winter.
G'day, Craig. How are you, mate?
Yeah, not too bad, and we're looking forward to seeing that opening night when Speedway Drag Racing are really going to be turning it on in the West.
Yes, well, on the 17th of November is the planned opening of the new $20 million Motorplex, which is approximately 35 kilometres from the GPO to the south of Perth, off the Mitchell Freeway on the way down to Bunbury. It's going to be a purpose-built speedway track, 500 metres for the car track. The other thing, or the big thing about that, is the fact that we've made the turns as wide as the straights. And inside the car track, we're building a 360-metre international standard motorcycle track, and then attached on the western side of the complex will be an international standard drag racing complex. So it's just going to be something that I not only believe that West Australians will be proud of, but everyone involved in motorsport in Australia should be proud of.
But I believe you're also not stopping at just having racing facilities there, but a lot of the Western Australian motorsport and motoring manufacturers and designers and such are also building on the end of the Motorplex a real gasoline alley style of all the automotive trades getting together and being located at the Motorplex site.
Well, our hope is the fact that the suburb, that the actual place is called Kwinana Beach, and there is an industrial area called Hope Valley, and we are hoping that once we're up and running, that they are going to follow suit. Now, several of the manufacturers here in Perth and the people that distribute parts for racing cars last couple of years didn't release renew their leases for long periods in the various places they were situated in around the metropolitan area of Perth, with the hope that once the Motorplex was built, or they would be in that area. So I believe that's what's going to happen. That is a long-term plan. Of course, the long-term other plan is the fact that sports like go-karting and motocross will also move to a similar area as where we are, not on the same as the Motorplex, but they'd also be adjacent to it, and we'd be able to use the car park. We're having a car park for 5,000 cars, so you can see that the actual speedway and the drag racing takes up 165 hectares, so you can see it's an enormous complex, and really something that we're all very proud of.
Yeah, I think that everyone's looking forward to seeing this all kicking off, and of course, how far along now in the building and construction of it is the process?
I'd say that we're about halfway now, Craig. Last week the toilets were completed, now they've got to be fitted out, and on Thursday we started to construct the entrance to the Motorplex. The pits themselves, there are 4 hectares of pits. All the road base is down. We've just got to now bitumise the roads. The lawn's got to go in, and we're going to reticulate it as well. So I'd say we're halfway over, and with around about 3 months before we open the gate, I don't believe the complex will be totally finished. In fact, some works will carry on after we've run our first race meeting. But our first race meeting is the 17th of November, which is a shakedown, and the following week we're running World Series sprint cars. So you're going to see that it's a very tight schedule. And of course, the drag racing, we start on the Friday night, the 17th, and they start on the Saturday night, the 18th, and I believe they've got Victor Bray and Michelle Splatt coming over, so you can see it's a full-on promotion of what we're trying to make this launch something very, very special.
It sounds like it is going to be a fantastic time for everyone out in the West who's involved in speedway and drag racing, and really, hopefully we can see a lot more of this type of investment into Speedway over the next few years, because it's certainly needing it.
Well, it is. Unfortunately, Craig, I suppose that there's a problem in Speedway, and I don't know how we're ever going to cure it. We have got far too much of a them and us attitude, the competitors versus the promoters. The success of the sport requires a huge amount of financial outlay to attract people to the grounds. We also need a lot of competitors, and we have to attract them, and there appears to be still this divide that's so great. When NASA was designed and put up, was hope that would unite the sport, hoping that would bring the sport together in a respect that we'll be able to make it bigger and better. Now, all we've done for the last 3.5-4 years now is in some states done nothing else but probably continually have arguments with various competitive divisions. And all the time we're losing a lot of ground to sports like Australian rules football, which is the most successful sport in Australia, cricket, rugby league. Well, you know what's happened to rugby league by them being divided. Their sport's all but a joke now. I mean, the crowds are a fraction of what they were in their heyday. And really, if Speedway doesn't get smart, that means the competitors and the promoters somewhere along the line, we're going to find ourselves in a similar position.
Yeah, and well, we are all looking forward to November now, when we will see the motorplex up and running in its full glory. And a busy schedule. How has the schedule been coming together? Because last year you were just flat out.
Yeah, well, we still are. I mean, I just came back last Tuesday from being away for a couple of weeks overseas, but it's amazing. You know, we got the nod at the end of March, the final nod, to start work, and what we have done, we've moved 1,100,000 metres of dirt. There's been something like $5 million worth of earthworks and close to $3 million worth of drainage works. So there's $8 million of the close to $20 million that's being spent. And if anyone wants to visit our website, it's www.motorplex.com.au in lowercase. And we can take you through the phases of the construction. And it really is something that's well worth everyone having a look at. And we're hoping that we're going to attract the world's best riders and drivers to our state to view the sport. Michael Figlamini, as you know, is currently in America doing pretty wonderful things. And we're hoping that he'll be able to spread the word about the West and Australian Speedway. And let's face it, all we're hoping for is big success, sunny days and big crowds.
Yeah, well, I'm sure you're going to be able to fit them all in, and they're all going to see some great racing out there at the Motorplex. And Con Migro, it's been a pleasure to catch up with you over in the West once again.
For sure. It's great to talk to you, and look forward to speaking to you as the weeks and days roll into the opening of the 70th of November. Thanks, Craig.
Thanks very much, Con Migro.
Yeah, see you, buddy.
And for drag race fans in Canberra, there's possibly a little bit of hope on the horizon, because apparently discussions have commenced between the ACT government and the promoters, organisers of the Canberra National Dragway, to look at the possibility of finding an alternative site and funding for the building of a new facility. Obviously enough, the Canberra National Dragway people are in legal dispute with the ACT government over the closure of the current dragway, and discussions no doubt have started off to hopefully forestall further legal action. And it's good to see that after some 12 months or more of no drag racing in the ACT, that at least things are possibly moving on to where we might one day see a new facility being built here in Canberra that will allow the re-establishment of drag racing with a long-term outlook rather than the short-term, which we've had in the past. Who knows where they're going to build it? And of course the old story is, where will they build it, and who will complain about the noise from it? It's always one of those things, maybe you build a motor racing circuit, that somebody somewhere will feel that their space is being invaded, and that the noise will have some adverse effect on their lifestyle. Well, hopefully they can find somewhere in the ACT, which is a pretty damn big place in reasonable terms, to build a new dragway, and hopefully some other motorsport facilities that people can get out and enjoy. I think they'd call it the NIMBY Dragway, not in my backyard dragway.
But the ridiculous thing is, you don't have to worry about, like, you can build it now, and everything's fine. And that's a major problem with motorsport. 20 years later, it's a bit like airports, 20 years later, people eventually decide to move next to them and want to close them down.
Mm. Well, it's the same thing. If you look at the situation with Oran Park, when I first started going to Oran Park, well, 20-plus years ago, it was a case that, you know, there was Narellan was as near as you got, and then you had quite some miles and miles, or kilometres, and then you had the racetrack. Now, basically, the urban estates have built up to the reverse side of the hill that separates Oran Park from the Narellan region, and they just keep getting closer all the time. You know, it's what eventually led to the downfall of Amaru, which we well know about, and there's other tracks around the place which are always running these problems, but people just keep building closer and closer to them.
Yeah, it seems like Willowbank is the one place that has the formula fairly well worked out, and that is you build your raceway right next to an Air Force base. So that way you're noisy, but not the noisiest thing on the block.
Well, that's right. I'm sure an F-111 is a little bit noisier than a drag car, so or a race car, and that's just the beauty of what they've done out at Willowbank Queensland Raceway. You know, they've actually built it in like an area that is protected by the sound. Suppose then, therefore, the best place to build dragway would probably be further out along Majura Lane, under the flight path to or from Canberra Airport.
Yeah, well, that makes a lot of sense, and you know, and whilst they're pulling the dragway in, new speedway, new road racing course, maybe a rallycross area. Hey, happy days.
Actually, the dragway.
Why don't I run for government?
The dragway was actually in a perfect place, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. Up until someone bought the airport. Look, it is the 46th annual US Nationals, and whilst the driving fans had to brave heat in Indiana, and I hope that heat keeps up in Indiana, let me tell you, because IRP had temperatures hovering near the 100 degree mark. Now that would be 100 degrees Fahrenheit, wouldn't it? What's that in real money? I look at Peter Norton, who has just spent 2 years over in North America, and he looks at me funny.
Well, Canada, of course, is metric.
It's metric, of course it is, yeah.
It's all those French people that live in Canada, you see, that do those sort of things.
They want to break off. Yes. All right. It helped keep the elapsed times at IRP's famous quarter mile mostly in check on Saturday, as evidenced by the fact that 3 of 5 professional class leaders from Friday night stayed at the front of their respective fields. But despite the heat, every driver in attendance continued their individual quest for the championship in the 46th annual US Nationals, and several respectable laps were recorded across the board during the day's two qualifying sessions, especially during the second pro stock round, which took place in the twilight hours. Several drivers took shot at the top fuel leader, McLaren, during the Saturday's two rounds, but none could better the 4.655 second lap at 317.57 mile per hour that he posted under the lights in Friday evening. McLaren, the defending champion of this event, is still the holder of the quickest and fastest laps recorded this weekend. "We were still being aggressive today, maybe not so much," McLaren said. Wes Kearney, the crew chief, knows we're in solid, so, well, he's trying some things that the best part about being number one right out of the trailer. "I feel bad for the fans today, though. I know that it's hot, and when I was in my fire suit, but it must have been miserable to sit up in the stands all day. I hope everyone was drinking plenty of water. Tomorrow's supposed to be 10 to 12 degrees cooler, and if that's the case, everyone will be a lot happier." You look like you're going to say something. Correct me on something. You're just too quiet over there. Someone's a bit too quiet over there. I don't like it. Don't feel comfortable. The hot weather kept the top 8 qualifiers in the same order as they started. And just to give you an idea of on that, it was Bob Vandergriff with a 4.658. Tony Shoemaker with a 4.662, Larry Dixon a 4.668, Joel Motto 4.689, Kenny Bernstein a 4.697, Tim Gibson a 7.38, Don Lampus a 4.745, and that of course followed McLaren on the ladder. The majority of the jostling came in the bottom half of the field, where the more notable move saw Team Winston's Gary Selfie jump from out of contention to the ninth position with a 4.751, and the goosehead.com Shirley Mondowney. Now Mondowney jumping back into an NHRA ride from the IHRA, which she'd been contesting in for the majority of this season. She slipped to 14th because she couldn't improve on a 4.779 pass. So, from the Fram driver, Rhonda Hartman-Smith, holds the bump spot, which is a 4.797 at 306.19 miles an hour, and she must now hold off Paul Ramone, Melanie Trott, David Grubnick, of course the Australian, and three others to stay in the field. The top fuel results, Johnson's bid to stay in the top of the funny car class in the Hoffman Pontiac was a bit more frantic than McLaren's fight at the top of top fuel. The biggest challenge came from John Force and Ron Capps, who ran side by side and 4.96 second passes at 300 miles per hour. Well, it was just an unbelievable double run. The laps came within a few thousandths of a second of Johnson, but in the end, TJ was with a 4.963 was just enough to stay ahead of Force with a 4.967 and Capps 4.968. A pretty impressive side-by-side run there. And hopefully in the Australian year to come, we will see some racing just as even as that.
Well, that's if we get some drag strips operating around the place, because the problem is still running with Sydney. We've got the problem here with Canberra, and at least we'll have the Motorplex over in WA, and we've got Queensland running and Calder, so that's about it, really.
Well, yeah, the Motorplex in Queensland, AIS and Calder, there is some talk about dramas there too, so we hope that Andrew can keep everything together for that.
Mm. I've got a bit of a story here that popped up back in July, actually, but in the context of it's talking about NASCAR and speeds and safety, shortly after this little article popped up, people were starting to get injured, so it wasn't appropriate to actually repeat some of the comments here. Craig, you were saying?
Yeah, because I got an email from our good friends at Lowe's Motor Speedways. They're going to be trialling the a soft wall on the outside wall of Lowe's Motor Speedway.
Yeah, that's something that we couple of
I think Ed Simpson has designed it.
Yeah, I've heard a couple of years ago that there was new technology in instead of tyre barriers, it's a big airbag that you install on these walls. And
so long as it wasn't designed by Homer Simpson.
But, no, in
the
fact...
The airbag you hit and go, dope!
Well, you still will hit it and go, dope, I'm led to believe. But see, when they ran at Watkins Glen Sears Point, NASCAR, where'd they run just recently? It was Sears Point, wasn't it? They run on that circuit, and they put these big foam blocks up on some of the corners because invariably these fellas have to turn right every now and then, which is a bit of a trick, you know. And yeah, they put the foam barriers in there so that they don't tear up quite as much stuff.
Yeah, the problem with the foam.
They just tear up the foam.
Yeah, the problem with the foam is that it leaves all of this sort of snow-like stuff, all of the white foamy beads all over the track, and that really disrupts racing. So the big advantage of these foam-filled, I guess it's a soft foam rather than a beanbag foam, it's a big cushion for people to crash into. So, yeah, it could be a step forward there. The article I've got here is that seven-time Winston Cup champion Dale Earnhardt, that's senior, the Intimidator, he lambasted NASCAR and his fellow competitors for the slow speeds over the weekend. This was back in July at the Daytona International Speedway. This is where the smaller restrictor plates led to a pole of only 187.5 miles per hour by Dale Jarrett, and it was the slowest since Cale Yarborough started on the inside front row with a lap of 186.8 way back in 1978. And the quote here from Earnhardt is, "They just don't want to run 200 miles per hour. They do it in kart, they do it in IRL, and they do it in drag racing. We're the only ones that ties the hands of the competitors on trying to go faster and being a competitive sport. I'm not pointing the finger at NASCAR," Earnhardt added. He was just saying that we need to grow up here and decide if we're going to race or what we're going to do. And he goes on to also to criticise some of his fellow drivers by labelling them chickens and candy asses for complaining about speeds on intermediate speedways. The quote goes on to say, "I've heard some drivers saying, we're going too fast at Charlotte." His comment back was, "Well, get the hell home in that case. Get out of the car if you've got feathers on your legs or butt."
Yes, and this is from a man who jumped out of an ambulance because he saw that all four wheels were still on the car at Daytona.
They don't make him much tougher than the Intimidator.
No, he certainly has got that area of roughneck NASCAR racing almost to his own. But you mentioned about Jeremy Mayfield in your NASCAR report, and he's the man, he's probably the only man that has put the crunch on Earnhardt to win a race, and pretty impressive stuff at Pocono on a Monday. Earlier on in the year, I think it was the June race at Pocono.
Yes, it was impressive to see. Everyone has, all the NASCAR drivers have a record or stories to tell where Earnhardt has tapped them out of the lead. I think it was last year, Terry Labonte was going towards his only victory of the year, and of course the Intimidator took him out from a certain victory. So it really was great to see he get some of his own back, and it's interesting that Mayfield was the one to do it. Most of the time, Mayfield's fairly quiet and tries to stay out of trouble, but it was really good to see someone take it up.
Yeah, and of course Earnhardt is the type of man that after the race is finished, and particularly something like the Daytona 500, he'll just drive up to you and put a donut on the side, because no one should win a race over him without him putting some sheet metal or taking some sheet metal off the car.
Yes, that's right.
It happened to, I think, Dale Jarrett when you were there?
Yep.
Yep. IHRA Summit Drag Racing Series, they have got their next race next weekend at Epping, North New Hampshire. I don't know if we'll have time to speak about that next week on the show, unless I can get it whipped away in the postcard from America, but the point standings after the Norwalk, Ohio race in Series C is the following standings. The top fuel is Paul Ramone on 753. He has two wins. Bruce Littleton with three wins on 707. Clay Milliken on 690 and two victories. Jim Head and Jim Bradley round out the top fuel field in the point standings. Pro Modified, Quayne Scott with three victories and 518. Fred Hahn with three victories, 462. Ed Hoover, one victory and 366. Ronnie Hood and Owl Bills is the rest of that is the top five in Pro Modified. In Funny Car, Scott Weeney with two wins and 647 points. Vaughn Smith, three wins, 598. Jim Rector with two wins and 507. Dale Brand and Billy Gibson round out the five. Pro Stock, John Montecalvo with one win and 530. Ron Miller, three victories and 529. John Yoke, 489. Steve Spies and Jerry Yeoman make up the five. Whilst in, we spoke at the beginning of this week's show, we spoke about Mark Webber, and in the news coming out, it was Mark Webber back after finishing third in the European Formula 3000 series, and of course he picked up in his rookie season third place with a win at Silverstone, and on Tuesday he was in Australia doing media appearances as he gets set for a Benetton Formula 1 test at Estoril, and he is confirming that two exciting new sponsorship partners with Computershare and the Portsea Hotel, Computershare and the Portsea Hotel coming on board. Webber's Arrows Formula 3000 car carried Computershare name and logo for the first time in round 8 of the series at Hockenheim last month, and it gave him a splendid debut with a third place, and they are a race suit sponsor, which means they're actually dishing out a bit more money, and it's actually going to him to get
which
on the race suit.
Which every driver needs is race suit money. It's always one of those perfect ways to do a sponsorship, get a driver in a car, particularly a good driver, is to say, okay, what you can put on your race suit you can keep, and what goes in the car is ours, and thank you very much.
Joining Computershare as sponsor is the famous Portsea Hotel, situated on Portsea Beach at the tip of the Mornington Peninsula, 100 kilometres south of Melbourne. And the hotel is located amidst some of Victoria's best golf courses and wineries in the local area. So now we know where he's going for holidays, or where the rest of the Webber family is going for holidays. But he does have to do a the test at Estoril on September 11th. And after the four-day test with Benetton in France, I think he's pretty much looking forward to it, as you could understand. And I mentioned right at the top, Australian youngster James Courtney won the prestigious British Formula Ford Championship, a feat that traditionally has been the launching pad to a Formula One career. The 20-year-old Sydney racer has clinched the title up for the Brands Hatch circuit, with two rounds of the championship still left to be run. The most notable graduate from the British Formula Ford series was the legendary Ayrton Senna, with the victory in the early 80s. Senna later won three World Formula One championships, and before he was killed at Imola. So the Ferrari fans finally got something back at him.
Actually, during the week, of course, we got the word that they have now confirmed that the Melbourne Grand Prix will stay. The Qantas Australian Grand Prix in Melbourne will stay there until 2010. In other Formula One news during the week is the word that the World Health Organization is looking at to introduce legislation to create a worldwide ban on tobacco advertising by 2003. The original situation was that the European Union were going to introduce legislation that would mean a ban on tobacco advertising by 2006. However, the World Health Organization has stepped in beforehand, and under international treaties that all the signatory governments to the United Nations would have to put in place, tobacco advertising would be out the door by 2003, which means that Formula One would be in a pretty difficult situation with their sponsorship.
Yes, it would hurt them quite a bit, and with the Premier One coming up, there is going to be that little bit of an extra push where other major multinational corporations are certainly going to go, well, we can go Formula One, or we can go this Premier One. If the ratings are good with Premier One, they've also got the added advantage of the football teams wearing the same sponsorship.
Mm.
Or, if, you know, alternatively, the football teams getting some motorsport sponsorship, which is probably the more correct way of looking at it.
Mm.
So that could also cost them quite a bit. But I think we might just talk about next weekend, the Queensland 500, of course, that one is going to be an interesting race. The defending race champions are Russell Ingall and Larry Perkins, I think. Or is it Garth Sander and Jason Barguana?
No, it's Perkins and Ingall.
Okay. And, of course, it was one of the comeback races for Ford before they dominated Bathurst, only not to win it.
Yep. And next weekend, actually, it's a busy weekend of motorsport. We have, heavens above, we've got the American Le Mans Series. They move to Portland. We have the V8s at Queensland Raceway in Queensland. Formula One, they're at Monza in Italy. The Indy Lights, they're at Laguna Seca along with Kart, they're also at Laguna Seca. The Superbikes are at Oschersleben in Germany. And the British Touring Car Championship, they'll be at Alton Park. So I can tell you what, it's going to be one very, very busy weekend of motorsport here on Inside Motorsport. Craig is heading off to overseas.
My first postcard from America.
So it's going to be yours truly, Colin Ford, sitting behind the panel. And if things sound like a lot of empty air from time to time, you'll know that I'm having fun with my learner's plates up. And we'll have our other compatriot in crime here, Peter Norton, he'll be up at Queensland Raceway. So he's getting smart. He's going as far away from the trouble as where it can possibly happen.
Oh, yeah.
But he's actually going to be the cause of some of the trouble because we're relying on him to at least match an hour's programming.
That's right. So, but the thing is, we're going to get a hold of a few people.
You're very quiet.
Very quiet.
Yeah, we've got plans to get a hold of a couple of people during the week and have some things on the backup, on the system, ready to go in case we do run into technical problems.
Or the footy show doesn't turn up and we have to do their hour.
So, yeah, we're going to be doing 3 hours. No, I don't want to think about this. My stomach is grumbling now.
All right, thanks for being with us. I look forward to speaking to you all from afar over the next few weeks and, well, I'm sure the Queensland 500 will be a great race. Colin Ford, your pick.
I reckon they're just too much on form. The Red Barons, the Holden Racing team, if they can't win it, then the most likely
winner...
Nobody
can.
No, the most likely winner, I reckon, they'll do something just so that Dick Johnson and Junior Johnson can win just for the sake of it.
Well, it sounds like a NASCAR petty conspiracy, doesn't it, Colin? Okay.
Another conspiracy, yeah. And my tip, well, I might not be too smart, but at least I'm loyal. I'll tip for Seaton as usual.
All right, I'm going to go for Craig Baird and the, is it the Pertec Falcon?
Yep.
Yep. I will put my two bobs worth in. I'm not going national. I guess I'm picking New Zealander, but it is a Ford, and I'm struggling to find a Ford team that I think can do it. Baird did have a win at the beginning of the year.
Yeah, it might be an interesting time because it is their home track for that team, so we'll see how they go.
All right, since we're struggling and we're not going to be able to make the next 10 minutes out, we will go to the BBC World Service. Thanks for being with us on Inside Motorsport this week.
Inside Motorsport is produced by Thunder Media in the studios of Triple S FM Canberra via Comrade Sat with the support of the Community Broadcasting Association of Australia.